Welcome into the Cam and Strick podcast, episode number 126.
You sound like shit.
No, I don't. My microphone sounds great, actually.
Your mic sounds decent. And listen, guys, by the way, we're not at the studio and we're kind of getting this out late. The fucking power went out in our studio. And so we couldn't do the ins and outs. So now we're doing them now. And then Andy goes outside and gets like, what do you get? Your notes? And now you sound like you've been fucking snorting crack all fucking night.
That's what it sounds like, man. I had to get I had to get my scripts, man, for the live reads. But I feel like shit, man. I go outside.
Sniffy.
That's how it is here in St. Louis, man. The allergies are so crazy. I can't take it. That's why I need to be living in the mountains with the mountain dogs.
Yeah, with the mountain dogs.
That's where I need to be.
Yeah, you'd be able to protect yourself up there. Hey, did you see that fucking tornado? I told you last night in Georgia at midnight, a midnight damn tornado cruises through. That's the scariest thing possible, dude. Everybody's sleeping. You kind of hear the alarm. Like last night, when I go to bed, man, I put static noise on, Andy. So like, I don't hear shit. I got a fan going. I got static noise. So like,
hold on.
What?
What do you mean static noise?
So it's an app on your phone that you can just, it's like a sleep app. And I just put static noise. So it's like white noise. Like, so it just
you
like drowns
that?
Out. Yeah. So it drowns out shit. Well, I used to do it when I had roommates back in the day because I don't want to fucking hear them beating off or fucking snoring. So I have to drown the shit out. So my point is, if you hear those sirens, you might not hear those goddamn sirens. So everybody's sleeping and this thing fucking cruises up to you at midnight and tears out a fucking subdivision. That's what happened. Five people are dead in Georgia, man.
Okay. So. Let me just say this. I hate hearing that. Whatever's going down in Georgia, man. Hope everybody's safe. All our Georgia listeners. I hope everybody's safe, man.
Five people aren't.
When we were doing this yesterday, first off, the power goes out in the entire city we were in. Like we were in Clayton, all of Clayton goes down, no stoplights, nothing. But the podcast gods were with us because the power went out right after we finished our interview.
Oh God, that would have fucking sucked. Yeah, Ted was awesome. Teddy was great. Teddy Nolan was great, but that would have been horrible. So I don't know what the hell that was all about. So Andy and I aren't together right now. If we sound a little funky, Andy partied all night. And that's why he's got the fucking sniffles.
Okay. So listen, you didn't do anything yesterday when the tornado was coming to Clayton. I mean, you talk all this game, like, you know, what's going on about tornadoes and you know, what's happening, you know, what to do when the situation arises. We basically had one in Clayton yesterday. I mean, the tornado was coming. We had no power. People have flashlights inside the hallway. They're scurrying around everywhere. People are frantic.
Andy,
they're screaming.
Andy.
There's a lot of panic going on inside the building. What are you doing? Nothing.
Andy, fuck are you talking about? There was no fucking tornado in St. Louis.
Basically was in Clayton.
No. That was a breeze. That was like a 30 mile an hour breeze, dude. Damn you, dumb. I'm telling you, it didn't hit. Dude, there's going to be some long track tornadoes coming up. The first one kind of hit last night, but Missouri, it didn't hit anywhere. It's all south of us right now. We're going to get our fair share. Don't you worry. And I'll protect you like I usually do. Can't throw your fucking credit card at a goddamn tornado either. Pay it off, honey.
You might be able to. You never know. But all I know is that it was serious, a situation going on, and people around the building were, in the hallway with their heads ducked, you know, between their legs. You know how you do it? You don't know how you to do it.
I don't do that. I don't fucking do that when there's no tornado. I don't do that when there's no tornado. All right, enough of your tornado talk. You don't know what you're fucking talking about. I can't talk. Listen, you got to. You're not up to speed with me, dude. You're not up to speed with me when it comes to the weather.
Okay.
So stop.
I'm not up to speed with you this morning. Why are you so energetic this morning?
I've been up since 6.
I got my first cup of coffee. Fucking going partying. Right now. Really, we actually needed to start this thing about 15, 20 minutes later. Or I would have been golden.
Fuck, you should have saved some of that party, those party favors you were doing last night for this morning. So you have a little bit more energy and keep up with me and more things. What's wrong with you?
It's my
snuffleupagus. Fucking. Hey, that was a pretty cool tribute last night to Bobby. And we talked about him a little bit. Or did we? We didn't talk about him, did we?
No.
Andy?
No,
we didn't. So, guys, you know how Bobby Plager, and I'm sure you've heard, he passed away a couple days ago. And look, we were so close with this man. It fucked us up and we're still kind of messed up about it. There's certain guys that are way worse than others, including guys like Kelly Chase, who were just extremely close with him, Barrett Jackman, Mike Caruso, and guys that work with that fucking man for years and years and saw him every single day. And I just want to say, man, we all, sad. The whole city was shattered. The whole fucking city. Go on Facebook. I mean, every person. I got fucking food delivered from a guy from Deerberg's. I'm a fancy lad, and they delivered the food. And they're like, even that guy was like, "Oh God, Bobby." And I'm like, I know. Everywhere you go, it's just, he just was that kind of guy. And I said this yesterday on the radio show, Andy, no matter what, you got to look at Bobby and think, holy shit, look what he's accomplished. He has kids that never seen him play that he's not on social media. Everything he does, his popularity is all organic. Meaning he goes places, he sees people firsthand, he shakes hands. They have kids that look up to him, and he hasn't played in 50 fucking years. So it's like, that's when you know you're a fucking good dude. Not social media, none of that shit. He goes directly to people, and that's why everybody knows him, and that's why he's the fucking man. And he's partying in heaven right now with his fucking brothers, man.
Well, you know, every franchise, man, in sports, no matter what sport, kind of has that one living iconic figure, you know?
Yep.
And so for people who don't know, who are hanging out right now, probably, are they still shoveling snow in Saskatchewan right now?
Maybe, dude. Maybe.
Has it melted? I mean, those people who don't know, Bobby Plager was that guy for St. Louis. And usually you give that title to somebody who's maybe more accomplished as a player, Hall of Famer. It didn't really matter. I mean, Bobby Plager has his number retired by the St. Louis Blues because of what he meant to the city and what he meant to this franchise and what the Plager name has always meant to this franchise. Like, he was the identity that the St. Louis Blues had become over the course of their Andy. Existence.
He was their whole faith. He was the most important person in Blues history, mm-hmm. in my opinion. Mm-hmm. He's the most important. And you got Holly next, and you got guys there, here and there. Sorry, my cat is all over me right now. Yeah. But I look like this, Andy. You know how we grew up watching the Blues fucking die hard. Our parents didn't play hockey. We had no hockey, anything, but we just watched the Blues and we looked at guys, and you were obsessed with a bunch of different guys. I got obsessed with Holly and fucking Twister and those guys. And I'm like, God, I want to be them. But then afterwards, after I get done playing and you know, you're playing for the Blues, and you see Bobby, all these different places. I'm like, holy shit. I wanted to be that tough guy in the show. And then afterwards you look at a guy like Bobby, like, okay, this is how I want to be afterwards. Go to places, shake hands, be nice to everybody, talk to people like you fucking have known them for 15 years when you first meet them. That's the little shit that goes so far. Bobby will talk to you like he's known you forever. And I see him do that to guys, and I'm like, fuck, man, I had a little bit of that organically, and he perfected it. And there's so many different reasons why I look up to that guy. And we're going to the game tonight too, by the way, Andy. Kate and I are going to go, so we're pumped up about
it. Okay, good. Yeah, and I told you yesterday you should go.
I know, and I am.
And on tonight's game, we've got like really part two, and it's almost even going to be more in terms of our tribute to Bob Plager, in terms of what we'll do on the TV side because of this being the first home game. And obviously, like you said, all the alumni going to be there. And
they're all there, Andy. Twister's coming, fucking all the big boys.
Yeah, I just I feel so bad for the family, you know.
Because for
the last several years, I mean, every time you see Bobby, I mean, right there with him is his grandkids, his granddaughter, grandson, his daughter Melissa, son-in-law Dave.
I know.
Listen to the podcast, by the way, man, and we love
we love you. We love you so much.
And you know, they're going to have so many people there that are going to be taking care of them forever, man. But this is one of those situations where you just weren't expecting it. You know what I mean? It's just,
well, you were, Andy.
It came out of nowhere.
Yeah, but Andy, he was getting older. Look, man, 5 years ago, and this is what happens with your parents too when you get older. You get to a point where you sit back and you're like, okay, this happened to me with my dad about 4 years ago where he had some heart problems. And my first time where I truly sat back and I'm like, okay, I got to cherish every fucking second with this, with my family. You know, they're both getting older. I drive 20 fucking minutes out of my way every day to see them. And it just 4 years ago, it hit me. And I'm like, okay, you just got to cherish it. With Bobby, it's the same kind of way. Like, he's just getting older and, you know, you see him and he looks good and this, that, but you're like, he's getting older. So cherish the fucking moments. He lived an unbelievable life. He lived a long time, and that's how he went. That's how he was supposed to go. And he's up there shining down on us, dude. So no, I don't want to get too sentimental, but
no,
you know how it is.
No, no. But I will say this though about Bobby, and everybody has their own individual relationship with him. For some people, it may have been player, coach, may have been coworker, may have been friend, may have been somebody that he knows at the bar. I mean, there's a bar here in St. Louis called Bobby's Place that he would go to virtually every single day. So some
the owner.
Relationship with him, was from being at the bar and hanging out. I mean, some people, got to know Bob Plager probably back in the 70s and have known him, since then, in terms of just being his friend. So, everybody has a different relationship. So, but I was going through my text messages yesterday. Like, he would send me random text messages all the time that were absolutely hilarious. And I could never show probably half of them.
No.
His humor went to such extremes sometimes,
Andy.
But I'm telling you, absolutely hilarious. So if you want to have a laugh, man, I mean, sometimes you have to think about the good things, Cam, and the stuff that made you laugh when you spent time with him, because that'll help you truly get through it. But just going through the text messages of what he sent me, man. I mean, dude, you want to laugh? I'm going to show you some of these. They're absolutely hilarious.
I know what the fuck they are, dude. And I'm like, you know how you. Everybody listening right now, how you're kind of protective of your phone. If you catch my drift, you don't leave your phone. Like, I always turn my phone over whenever I fucking put it down, just in case somebody texts, some fucking losy or somebody sends that random text. So Bobby would send me texts and it'd pop up and it'd be something hardcore. And then Kate would come over, my wife, and be like, "What is that?" And I'm like, "Oh, fuck. Oh, it's just from Bobby." And she's like, "Oh, okay. Oh, okay." Like, it didn't matter. He's like, "Oh, it's Bobby. Okay, cool." So I'm going to go through it, man. I had a little cry last night just going through different photos and shit. Yeah. But did you watch around the league last night, man? There's some fucking big old hits going on. Holy fuck. Did you see that Zadorov layout? Who did he fucking go? He is so big and tough, dude. I'd take him on my blue line, Andy. Who, doggy?
Dude, that's what I was saying last night, because that's one thing the Blues could use right now is a little bit of meat back there on the back end. Like, they've got a lot of defensemen that are kind of the same player when you think about it. They've got the Krug, they got the Fox, they've got Duns. They've got these guys, and they're all good players, but they're good, in similar ways in terms of their how they play, So you could use a little bit of every
team. A motherfucker? Like a motherfucker? Yeah.
Every team could use that. And, he's the guy in Colorado, man. You just knew. Like, he's just one of those unpredictable players, man, that every game you just don't know what that guy's capable
He'll
of
get
doing.
You, Andy. He'll fucking Bobby Plager your ass, by the way. Could we talk about that video real quick? Real quick, before we go on anymore.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, real quick, guys. Andy's got the trifecta on him already. Actually, a quadruple, and I'm going to tell you the last one.
Uh-oh.
So, 2006, when Andy... somebody chirped you, by the way, and I stuck up for you on Twitter. They chirped you, and I go, they chirped you about being a media guy. And I go, he's the only media guy that could actually fucking skate in this town. And that is a fact, okay? You're not very fast or powerful. I'll tell you that. But you could actually fucking skate, unlike any one of those guys. So 2006, Andy gets invited out to a fantasy camp game.
Charity
and he's game. Like, charity game. He's the only fucking media guy out there. And he's like, nee, 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 nee. I don't got shoulder pads on. I'm like Bobby Plager.
No,
look at
I
me.
Did have shoulder pads on.
Well,
I
you're lucky. That's why pads. You're alive right now. That's why you're alive right now. Yes. So Andy goes down in a corner, and you got to look on Twitter. It's so funny. He's like, the puck gets caught into his skates. Like, he's like, what do I do? And it's like, when you're a hitter, you dream of those kind of hits when the guy has to puck in his skates. And Bobby, at the age of like 65, fucking hits you with a hip check and puts you on your ass. Then he goes and they interview him. He goes, you know who that was? I was one of the media guys. Oh, my God. And so anyway, 3 years later, before the winter, or 3 years after that, before the Winter Classic, or 6 years after that, whatever it was, we all came together training for the Winter Classic game. When we had all the guys out there, Chaser comes down and fucking Cronwalls you. You lose your mind. You didn't lose your mind on Bobby. You lose it on Chaser. And then you went shark eyes. And then, of course, a couple of weeks ago, I fucking put you on your ass, too. So that's three guys, three big hitters. And you ate all of them and you sucked it up. You bitched about mine more than anyone, but you sucked it up. But the fourth guy that abused you, who do you think it is?
I don't know.
We just had him on. No, we just had him on.
Who, Teddy Nolan?
No, he didn't abuse you.
Oh, Prongs?
No. Well, no.
Prongs verbally abused me.
No, I know he did. Prongs, I don't blame him.
Verbally abused
me. Because after, no. I see these fucking clips with you and Prongs. I see you he's giving a fucking speech in a locker room and you're over there doing something else and he answers a question and then you come over like, oh, Chris, hey, Chris, what's this? He's like, I already fucking answered it. You're over there.
I know. Hey, listen,
but you know who I'm talking about though?
Lauren Pronger, though, every time she sees me, she just says, I got to give you a hug. She's like, I am so sorry. She yells at Chris because she'll hear him on the phone. You know, like, I'll be talking to Chris and he'll be like, what the fuck are you talking about? You know, and she's like, who are you talking to?
Oh, fucking Andy. Who's the fourth guy? You got to think, we had him on and it was very controversial. He might have choked you under.
Oh, my God.
He might have choked you one day.
Really? Oh, Mike Babcock. Oh, yeah.
How many people choke you up, dude?
Babcock.
How many people choke you out? He got you.
Listen. Now, here's the question. If I was in a must-live situation, like it's like death or life, whatever.
Do or die. Yeah.
Death or life. God, death or life. Dude, it's early in the morning, man. We had a fucking tornado last night. So who would I survive out of the foxhole? I mean, if I had to get through you, Chaser, Bobby, or Babcock, who could I handle?
Andy, I'm 230 fucking jacked right now, okay? You ain't going nowhere, all right? If I get a hold of you, you ain't going nowhere. What are you talking about? You're still okay. Rattled. You're still so rattled listen. From me brushing you off the other day.
So, okay, so let me set the scene here for that play in that charity game, because this guy, like, we were playing against the Blues alumni, and my buddy Kylie Hill, who, by the way, played for Ted Nolan, won a Memorial
Cup. He was tough.
Oh yeah, and he won a Memorial Cup with Ted Nolan back in the Sioux back in 1993, and really good player back in the USA. So the Missouri River Otters played in the UHL. So the UHL was here in St. Louis. So they had an All-Star game and they had a charity game to go with it. So it was UHL All-Stars. I worked in the UHL doing broadcasts and whatever. So they invited me to play in it against the Blues alumni, but I didn't know anybody on the team except for Kylie Hill. So I'm skating into the zone. He's screaming at the top of his lungs to drop the puck. I'm like, who the hell is this? I turn around. I turn my head backwards to see who's yelling. And that's when I lose the puck. The puck's in my skates. And before you know it, my chin strap, chin strap is around my neck. The helmet's off. The helmet's
you look
my head. And I'm looking up at Bobby. And he has this smile on his face, knowing exactly what happened. Afterwards, at the and the rest of the game, he's just dying laughing. I don't think he took another shift. Like, he was so satisfied. He was like, okay, I'm done for the game.
Yep, I got my hit.
After the game in the after party, he could not stop laughing. And I was like, oh my God. So the next day, he tells the story, which was amazing how he would tell it. He said he walked into the Blues dressing room. He showed all the boys the video, and everybody's high-fiving him, okay, for just laying me out. And he made sure that the Blues put it on the Jumbotron. Remember they used to have the Casino Queen biggest hits during the games, okay?
Hell yeah, that was like, my highlight reel.
Like Zadorov would be on there for today's game, put it that way.
Yeah.
And so in the middle of all these NHL hits, you have Bobby's hip check. I'm like, well, you stop showing that, please.
65 years old, but, putting you on your fucking ass.
But I remember the next day, Darren Pang actually came on the radio, and Panger was mic'd up and he was playing goal in this charity game. He wasn't working for the Blues at the time, so he had no Blues connection, but they brought him in town for this game. And he brought it up and I was like, hey, that's a badge of honor to be hit by Bobby Plager. How many people can say that they were hip checked by Bobby Plager, who is the face of the hip check really throughout NHL?
You're the last person he hit, probably. I don't think he played another game after that. I don't think he could play after that. He was fucking getting older. Couldn't move around, but he laid into you so fucking hard. And that was the last one and it was on you. So I in all honesty, like, I know I make fun of you, but that, I don't know. I anything like that with him, if you have a connection, I don't care if he put you on your ass or not, it's still a good feeling. But I had more NHL notes, but my goddamn cat goes on my fucking computer and somehow deletes my notes. Okay. How did you do that, boo?
The cat did it?
She did it.
Before we get to Teddy, I want to get your take on the Peelsy situation. Now, again, I always preface it. We know him personally. Am I a little biased in the situation? Probably.
Me too.
But at the same time,
it's not good for the NHL.
He's retiring in 3 or 4 weeks. Did they have to kick him out and just say, see you later? You know, I did talk to a GM the other day who said, listen, the league had no choice.
Yeah, I mean, I get that, man. It's look, it's a sensitive subject. It's been a sensitive subject all for years now with the refs and consistency and things like that. Did you see last night in one of the games, I think it's Toronto game, where Simmons comes over to talk to the ref. One of the refs grabs his mic, holds it with his hand, and starts talking. And I'm like, I don't fucking blame you for that. Although I like to hear what you're saying. Mm-hmm. That'd be kind of cool. But if I'm a ref, you ain't getting nothing out of me, dude. I don't give a shit.
Well, I'm with you. What if you're a player? I mean, the days of players getting mic'd, like if you're a player, would you want to be mic'd, honestly?
I'd be in trouble. I'd say nothing like, but I'd say a couple hardcore things. Nothing like derogatory. It just would be like some verbiage
Let me put it this way, though. Yeah. All it takes is for you to say one thing, man. They can kick your ass out of the league.
No shit. You know I'm mean? Not doing it. I say enough dumb shit on a podcast.
Obviously don't say dumb stuff, but I mean, if you say one thing and all of a sudden that got out, whether it's on purpose or not, listen, Timmy Peel, what he's saying to the other referee on the ice should never bleed over the air. So obviously somebody dropped the ball by having him powered up, and that person should be fired too, man. I hope that person's still never working the game either.
Thank you, Andy. Okay, if we're in radio, we've been in radio for a while now. That's like one of our fucking board ops, which has happened before, Andy.
Oh, yeah.
The segment's over. You go to fucking commercial break and you don't turn off the mic. And then all of a sudden you have a conversation. That fucking thing's on the air still. People are texting like, dude, you're still on. You're still on. All of a sudden the kid's like, what happened? Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Hey, what do we always say during the break before we start talking?
Are we off?
Like triple check that. Okay.
Yeah.
So.
No doubt.
But I do feel bad for POZ because like he didn't say something anti-Semitic. It wasn't racist.
No,
he didn't murder somebody. He didn't commit a crime.
And is that frowned upon? Murder? Is it frowned upon?
Well, you can't do that.
All right,
yeah, you can't do that. So, man, you know that's a tough situation. But some of these referees, by the way, I will say this. And this is coming from former players, a former player that I talked to yesterday that said, you know, guys like Paul Stewart and some of these people that are on Twitter, social media, running their mouth and whatever. And they're like, please, are you kidding me? Some of the stuff those referees would say to the players. I mean, they would threaten to fight players back in the day.
So Kerry Frazier stuck up for him.
Okay, Kerry may have. Okay. Yeah, Kerry may have. But apparently some of the other referees haven't. And back in a one referee system, Cam, you know this. Hey, referees are all about managing the game. And it was way easier to do that in a one referee system versus a two referee system in terms of managing the game and
consistency and stuff. Yeah.
And you know what? Coaches expect makeup calls. When you're a coach on the bench and you know you've had to kill off three power plays and you haven't had a power play yet, what are you saying to the referee? You're pulling them over to the bench. Are we ever going to get one? Are we going to get a power play?
Yeah. We had
three. We haven't had any. When are we getting one? So you're waiting for the makeup call. Coaches expect to make a call. Players expect to make up call. Makeup calls have been part of hockey forever. And if they wanted to, Cam, a makeup call doesn't mean that it's not a penalty and they're raising their arm and they're shuffling somebody off to the box and it's not a penalty. A makeup call just means that they're calling it. They could call a penalty all game long. If you wanted to have 25 penalties a game or a night, you could obviously do that. So it's just the fact that he got caught saying it. And I think gambling being a part of hockey, I think the league is just like, you know what? You look at ESPN.com and you see all the headlines and it's like Deshaun Watson, another accuser comes after Deshaun Watson. And right below that, it's like NHL referee, hot mic. And I think the NHL freaks out whenever there's any type of controversy. And they're like, okay, we just got to wash our hands with it, move on. To find any way possible to have this story die, you know what I mean?
I'll tell you this, man. I remember when the two ref system started being put in play. I believe that was in the early 2000s. And I think that started in the O when I played. And we'd come in warmups and we're like, I remember being like, motherfucker, we got two fucking refs today. God damn it. Because that means I can't get away with what I want to get away with. Because you got another guy just watching me the whole fucking time. And then we all knew as a group that it's going to be inconsistent that night, especially when they first started doing that. And it's weird to look back on it, like one ref, like I felt like in the 70s, but it really was probably in the early 2000s, they started implementing two and we hated it off the bat. And now you can't even think of a game without two refs.
Yeah, I know. So anyway, we'll get PLZ on, man. And we'll have a conversation with him and he'll be able to tell his side of the story. And again, at the end of the day, I will say this about Tim Peel, man, this guy had a long career very successful career in the NHL. He officiated over 1,400 games, something like
that. Yeah, it's a lot of shit. That's a lot of travel. It's a lot of grinding. He got,
you know what I mean?
He got hit in a penis. He probably has a, his penis is probably cut in half right now. Remember that? He scored a goal.
Scored a beautiful goal.
Yeah, beautiful off goal. His penis.
I mean, from a terrible angle, too. Hey,
you can take that fucking goal. I don't hit my fucking cock, man. That good God, it's going to ruin your weekend.
On Luongo, too.
Yeah, it was like 5-0. I don't know how the hell that went in.
Very bizarre. And Luongo looked like what? Because he tried to save it. Like, he literally scored the goal.
Yeah.
He blew it past Luongo. So, anyway, man, crazy. Just a crazy week.
Yeah, it is very crazy. Up and down emotionally.
Emotional week, without a doubt. So, anyway, let's get to Teddy Nolan, who...
yeah, dude.
What a life this guy's lived, huh? I mean...
Yeah, very... You know, like, he's very proud man. You know what I mean? He's proud of his heritage. He goes back there and lives up in, what's it called again? I forgot where he's from.
Garden River.
Garden River. He goes back there. He does all the charity work.
You could never make it. I could survive in Garden River. No electricity, no hot water. I could do it.
Shut up.
Jesus Christ. You couldn't.
Fancy boy. No, you couldn't. No, you could not. Good God almighty. But yeah, he is a proud guy. He went through a lot of shit. He went through a lot of weird racist shit. Like, God, like, I, you know, some of the shit he was saying, like, damn, man. Some stuff that we kind of pushed back on him with was like, well, you know, you said you got typecasted, but fuck, you got job offers by one of our boys, fucking Big Phil Esposito. He offered you a job right after all that shit went down and you turned that down. Then you complained about not getting jobs, but you actually had one. So, you know, there's a little bit of like, well, what about this? So we pushed back on him a little bit with that. But overall, that guy is a super guy. And I forgot that I roomed with his fucking son, by the way. I have a good memory, Andy. I have a really good memory. But Brandon, now I remember Brandon, great guy, cool family, very successful. And they found a way. But you mentioned, Andy, about Craig Berube. Like, did he go through that kind of shit? I'm sure he did at times. But did he have a hard time getting to the NHL, working his way up? He's a native, Native American, I should say. Is that the proper thing? So I don't know. I don't know. I don't know why he was typecasted and maybe other guys weren't, or maybe they all were. It just was a little bit harder, this, that, and the other. I don't know.
Well, who's to say if Teddy Nolan, if he accepted that job in Tampa Bay, what if he had success there in Tampa Bay? Who knows? Maybe he's still coaching in the NHL.
And, what year was that?
And I'm not going to sit here and say what he went through, man, that is right, because it obviously isn't. He's gone through some serious, serious stuff. And
damn right.
Listen, man, if you know me, I hate racism. It's one of the things. I just absolutely hate racism. I asked him flat out, what does it feel like to experience racism? You know, because a lot of us really don't know what that feels like, you know?
No.
And for him to explain that, you know, I feel for people who have to live a life like that, especially when they're young, when they talk about crying themselves to sleep, man, that'll just pull at your heartstrings for sure. But I will say this, for how he grew up, no hot water, no electricity, on a reservation where you see people who are abusing drugs and alcohol who can never get out. They have no chance of making
stuck. It. Stuck.
And this guy not only defied the odds for himself, he made it to the NHL as a player before he had a career as a coach. But his two sons are playing professional hockey. One is a 3-time Stanley Cup winner.
So, no, I mean, shit.
He did a lot of things right. A lot of went really, really well for this guy, too.
So I compare it to, like, you know, kids growing up in these hardcore inner cities, man, where all these, like when I went to high school in Eureka, where all the football coaches were like, just, they're great, man. They're hard on you, but they take all this, we talked about it, they bring them in, they shelter them, feed them all weekend. And now a lot of those kids moved out here and are friends with all the guys and living, and they kind of got out of that hellhole, which most of them live in. It is fucking hardcore. So I kind of compare that, the inner cities, to some of these reservations, man. And now they're completely different. You got a lot more guns and murder going on than this, but the poverty is still equal and it's still hard and you get stuck. But Teddy Nolan's getting guys out and showing them, no, there's another life you can live here. You can get out of this mess. Look what I did. So that is awesome.
He does a great thing with his foundation and talking to kids and whatever. He's a great example for a lot of people there. But the reality is, even here in the States, man, in the inner cities, I mean, a lot of kids don't get out. You know what I mean?
And exactly.
And that's just.
But a lot of people give them opportunities, though, Andy. You still got to help yourself at times, too. I see it, man. These coaches will try their hardest. Now, you still have to put some of the onus on you, too. They'll try to get you a path. So it's tough, man.
But you and I talked about this real quick, though. like when I was in high school, like half the student body's from the inner city, right?
Yeah.
And not everybody did that. I mean, we had football coaches and coaches who were math teachers who would fail the star athlete and not give them an opportunity to have success and get themselves out of the
well,
situation
who the
they
fuck
were living
did
in.
That?
Oh, yeah.
Fuck
I know, man. It was so weird, dude. Where yeah, I went, dude, it was weird, man.
Yeah,
it's changed. It's changed now, dude. Because, you know, some other people took over who, you know, had a clue. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, maybe if I don't fail this kid, I'm going to give him a chance. Maybe I'll help him pass.
Well, the kid could be—I mean, the kid could just be a big dipshit. He didn't give
no,
a shit either.
Not,
you can't
man,
just give
not.
Him. Okay, well then there you go. Well then that's fine. Then the fucking teacher's a dummy.
Yeah,
so.
for sure. All right, let's get to this interview. As always, brought to you by CarShield. CarShield.com, Cam. You know the phone. What's the phone number, Cam?
Man, don't. Why my memory sucks?
Oh,
on.
I know.
877.
No, eight. No, hold on. 800-857-2481. Yeah. CarShield.com. Mention the promo code Cam. It's so embarrassing. You'll save 10%, though.
I remember that
You're
part.
You're going to save some money. You don't remember living with Brandon.
It was a week.
Nolan, dude.
It was only
you acted
a week.
Like you did. You have no idea who he's talking about.
No, I
Although
do.
He has
man.
Sick hair. And Jordan is a good player, man. You played against Jordan.
Cool. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I tried to fight him one time, but. Somebody, he just didn't fight me. Yeah, I don't want to beat him, but he didn't fight. It is what it is. But he ran somebody over. So stop it, boo. Yeah. Oh,
but he will fight and he'll run you too. He was a good player. Well,
he's tough, man.
Teddy Nolan said if he gets another chance, he's basically building his team around him.
I know.
Which he should. It's his son.
Interesting.
Which he should. So again, CarShield and CarShield.com. Get that protection today. Don't be left out in the cold, man. You never know when something's going to go down. Daredevil hockey, man. I enjoy talking about this. You know, Carlo Colaiacovo out of Toronto, longtime NHL defenseman. This is so important because all the parents at the rink, they're like, hey, what is that daredevil hockey? Because skate lacerations are just absolutely crazy. I mean, it's like the leading cause of emergency room visits among like all youth hockey players, dude, are from skate cuts.
Ask Jeff Brown and his kid.
He's got it right now. Quinn Hughes, his younger brother, Luke Hughes. That kid, Luke Hughes, is supposed to be a top five pick. I think he's out for the year because he got a serious skate laceration. Like
Andy,
these
Kevlar
socks, man, that people wear, I think it can protect you to an extent, but they aren't cut proof. I'll tell you that. Too many kids are getting cut wearing these. So that's where Daredevil Hockey comes in, man.
Again, I wore it the other night.
Yeah, hold on. Again, the promo code Cam and Strick, all caps, will save you 25%. So here's what it is, Cam. I want to get your experience wearing it, what you thought about it. But it's lightweight, compression-based, Kevlar cut-resistant fabric overlays, man. You cannot cut through this stuff. And the Kevlar protection is in all the vulnerable areas. So you talk about the wrist. You talk about the back of the hamstrings, the back of the calves, the Achilles area.
Yes.
Those are the areas you need to be protected. And if you're out there, if you're a parent, you're thinking, well, this only happens to the older kids. No, it doesn't. I watch these young kids, four-year-olds skating around. I mean, we got a soccer ball out there. They're playing soccer and stuff like that, man. I'm like,
Andy,
they're falling all over each
other.
This is as scary as anything.
Andy, who in the fuck said that this only happens to older players? Go watch young kids. It's free for all. Skates are flying everywhere, hitting people in the face, doing that. They're falling all over each other. No, that you get cut more when you're young because you don't know what the fuck you're doing. And you don't know that you have weapons on your fucking feet. You don't realize that yet until you get older. So that the young kids get cut more than anybody. So I wore it the other night. It felt like I had nothing on. You think of like Kevlar, you're like, holy fuck, you think like military shit, like, God, it must be heavy. No. Mm-hmm. I didn't even notice it. And it was light, it was comfortable. And you don't, again, it's just like putting on regular under gear. You don't even realize that you have that Kevlar, but you feel it, you're like, yeah, there it is. There it is. Mm-hmm. And I scored a Baker's dozen.
Well, good. It gives a little bit of peace of mind too. And listen, it has the Velcro for your socks and everything. Like, they got it all figured out. So, and a lot of NHL guys are wearing this stuff too. So check out Daredevil Hockey and do that today. All right, Blue Chew, Cam. Is Kate sleeping?
Oh, she's sound asleep.
All right, Blue Chew, man. Let me tell you about this. Promo code Cam.
Let me tell you about
free.
It.
Let me
you'll
get
them
for free. I'm going to tell you. You are going to tell us. But listen, the promo code Cam. You'll get it for free for the next month. So get those orders in now. And let me know what you think, man. Listen, all the parents, by the way, were sending me text messages. And they're like, can you bring some samples to the rink? And I thought that they meant Daredevil hockey. I'm like, oh yeah, I'll show you what they look like and everything. Then you can place your order. They're like, we're talking about the blue pills
too. I want them blue things. Okay. I want them blue things. And the wife's like, get those blue things. Ask Andy. Ask Andy for the blue things. Ask Andy. That's when you know. That's when you know. My wife's like, get those blue fucking things from Andy. I want to sleep for 14 hours again, please. And I tell you this right now, you pop one of those bad boys, you're fucking, you're a sexual tyrannosaurus. And the next day, you don't even have a headache. The other shit, the next day when you wake up, you're like, oh God, pound, pound, pound. Not anymore. Not anymore. You wake up fresh as a daisy, and I'll tell you what, you are satisfied. And I suggest you take some, Andy, because yeah. I mean, your performance, who the fuck knows?
And you know what? You don't have to go to the doctor either. No pharmacies. Mm-mm. Mm-mm. No, you're not waiting in line. Dude, they bring it to your door, discreet box. The neighbors won't even know if you don't want them to know. The postman won't know.
Fuck, I let everybody know. It's on tonight, neighbors. And I'm not going to play music, so you're going to hear it.
BlueChew.com. Mention the promo code CAM. How often do you take these, dude? Like, is there like a, like, I mean, just like one a day? Like,
no. You don't eat them like fucking Skittles, dude. Okay. No, you take it 30, 40 minutes before you perform, and that's all you need. You could even cut it in half and eat half of it if you want, if you don't want that much of a hard on.
Okay.
I'm telling you, man, look, you want to have a more sex in your relationship, which helps your relationship. Like it does. Like, think about it. It does. This will help that. You're more romantic. The pleasure is like intensified. Think about it.
And if you don't like pills, man, you can just chew these up. So it's pretty simple.
Yeah, chew it up, baby. Chew them. Easy peasy. I'm looking at you.
.com. Again, get them for free and have them shipped directly to your door. Mention the promo code CAM, BlueChew.com. All right, Bellman.com. Our boy Dan Bellman. You know, he was tight with Bobby Plager.
I know.
Been around forever, so everybody's feeling it, including Dan Bellman. Head on out to Troy, Missouri. Check out the great vehicles they have there with the Cadillac, the Buick, the GMC. On the other side of the street, you got the Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram. Again, best customer service you'll find anywhere in the entire country is right here in Troy, Missouri, dude. So get yourself a new car. If you have an old car that you're looking to get rid of and you're like, well, what do I do with this? Dude, they will buy it from you, and they want to buy it from you. I mean, they're waiting to take it off your hands. They want to take it. Like, do you not understand that? They want your
car. I do understand it.
Okay. So take it there and get yourself a new ride. They've got something for everybody. Like I said, Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram. Choose.
I want that Buick. I want that Buick.
And Dan's the man.
Yeah, he is.
And he loves the game. And we appreciate his support here on the Cam and Strick podcast, no doubt about it. All right, camandstrick.com. Check out the hats, all the different hats that we have. There's a link right there for Keep It Handsome, because you know how important that is, man. You got to smell good nowadays. You got the shampoo, the conditioners, the hair gels. I just used the beard balm a few minutes ago. I should have brought it.
That was a fucking waste. It's a fucking waste.
For you to see. I do it right when I wake up. The first thing I do when I wake up before I make my coffee, I put the beard balm on.
You know, I used to do that when I was like 3. When my dad was shaving in the bathroom, and I'd go up next to him and I'd act like I was shaving. Is that what you do?
Maybe. I just, like with Blay, Blay's in the mirror, and then all of a sudden I'm just putting it on.
No. Ty's in the mirror shaving already, and you're acting like you are still. Hey, that's
funny. I think Blay's getting fat, by the way. I got this
issue. Well, fucking work him out then, Andy. Take him outside, for fuck's sakes. He's fucking cooped up. Take him outside. Good Lord. The allergies are going to get me. I don't want to go outside. Poor fucking dog's just laying in the corner like, oh, I need exercise. I'm bloated. Take him outside.
He went to fuck's the groomer. Sakes. They brushed him out, and he came back looking like he weighs 20 pounds more. His hair is everywhere.
My poor thing. Oh, Jesus.
I know. Why'd they do that to him?
Well, he's probably eating scraps. I think he's, like, roaming around the neighborhood, and, like your neighbors are, like, feeding him, like, old scraps, and that's how he's putting weight on, because you're not fucking feeding him the right food. You're not exercising him. You're not feeding him. You're not loving him. I'm taking him from you. Enough's enough.
So Laurie walks him every day, man, and they go for like crazy walks. So he should be fine. I don't know what his problem is, but
he hates you. He hates you.
Yeah. Cam and Strick, Keep It Handsome. Get the Fight Ugly hoodies. Get the Fight Ugly hats, man. Have you seen the Cam and Strick hats as we collaborated with Fight Ugly, dude? Check those out. Again, fightugly.com. Cam and Strick is the promo code there. That's going to save you 15%. So again, we're constantly saving you money with Keep It Handsome. All right, when I drive Black Tie. I'm looking outside the window right now, man. I see my beautiful BMW that I got from Drive Black Tie. I may swap that out I may swap it out, Cam. I've got to make a executive decision here in terms of what I want. I've got to figure that out because, you know, I get what I want and I get it when I want it because I drive Black Tie. Check it out. Download that app today. Look at all the vehicles they have. You can choose from all the different subscriptions. You got the bronze, silver, gold, platinum. So go ahead and check it out and do that today and choose the car that you want. And people are going to come up to you and be like, damn, you get a new car? Like the mail lady yesterday said, damn, Mr. Strickland. She calls me Mr. Strickland.
Yeah, and she said, you probably make her do it, you asswipe.
She's like, Mr. Strickland, another new car. I'm like, listen, I drive Black Tie. You should do it.
I just act like I'm really wealthy to people.
So check that out and do it today. Call Dylan, call Ellie. They'll take care of you.
Yeah, they're badass. Love them both. And yeah. And they'll look, it's such a cool thing. And again, you could swap it in. The weather's changing. You'll get that fucking Corvette. Whatever you want, drive Black Tie, baby.
Okay, and real quick. TheUltimateHockeyFans.com, Cam. I've got it in a box. I've got John the Fix-It Man coming out here Saturday to do some stuff for me. Do I hang up that ceiling fan in the house, or do we give it away to a lucky listener? I'm trying to figure out.
I don't know yet. If Ty wants it for his room, then he comes first. But if he, which I don't know why he wouldn't, like Jesus. But you know, if a lucky listener has a kid, then we'll do that because I kind of want it. I don't know. I want a kid to smile with it, you know? So if we can give away, if Ty wants it, that's fine with me, but we'll figure that out. They're cool
Paul,
shit.
We might have Paul make another one.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? I agree with that. Cool.
So anyway, Ultimate Hockey Fans, promo code Cam and Strick again, and you get free shipping, man. These things are incredible. They can make them for any NHL team. So be sure to check that out. We've got pictures up on our Instagram as well. All right, Teddy Nolan, man, episode number 126. We love this interview. We hope he gets another job. And listen, NHL general managers out there and owners, he said he's open to being an assistant coach too. So
let's go.
NHL head coach looking for some experience, a player's coach. All his former players, man, a bunch of these guys reached out. I called a couple of them to get some information. Do they love this guy? Absolutely love this guy, and it's an amazing conversation. You're going to love it too, right here on the Cam and Strick podcast.
So how are you, man? Everything good with you? Like, what's going down Garden River today?
Everything's great. You know, I've been quite busy. We're like everybody else, we're doing a lot of Zoom conferencing and communicating with I do a lot of work in our First Nation communities, which I've been doing since I played my first pro game back a long time ago. I always told myself I wanted to come back and try to talk to as many kids as I possibly can about some of the hurdles that they might face and some of the obstacles and how to overcome and so forth. So I've been doing it for quite some time, but particularly in the last 5 or 6 years, I've been working with two of my sons, both Brandon and Jordan, and we created the Three Nolans. We go into a lot of First Nation communities and do hockey schools. But more importantly, we talk to the kids about education and about goal setting, about nutrition and substance abuses and things like that. So it's been, probably the best job I've ever had.
No, I bet. Doesn't that feel good whenever you tell these kids and you show them the right way and you see them kind of grow and kind of figure it all out? But tell us about you growing up and kind of how hardcore it was. I mean, you had no running water and, you know, not much money.
No electricity.
Good God Almighty. Like, describe a daily, when you're young, growing up with the family, trying to do, you know, the normal things that normal kids do, and what you had to kind of overcome.
Well, you know, that was my normal. That was my everyday life. We had to go outside and chop wood in the morning to make sure we had enough firewood to keep that fire going, keep the house warm. Going into the city for the first time, going to school, and not having too much food in the house. My father was, unfortunately, he was sick a lot of times. He had a couple of heart attacks, and I lost one. I was only 15 years of age. But growing up, there were some times where we didn't have too much to eat and what have you. So, but the one thing, that one savior for me was the game of hockey. You probably heard a number of times how we made my own rink in my backyard and we didn't have the outdoor tap to turn on to water some snow and make it freeze. First of all, you have to make a fire at the bottom of the pump to thaw it out because it was so cold. And then you pump this little pail, you go around the corner and you spill it down, you pack your feet. Oh man, that must've took me a long time, but that's how I really learned how to play. And, eventually went to the city of Sault Ste. Marie and played recreation hockey when I was, I think, 8 years old or so. And that's how I never played AAA, AA. single A. I played house league hockey my whole life, but growing up in those type of situations was norm for me. I never once in my life ever thought I was a poor kid. I just thought that's the way life was for everyone. Mm-hmm. And then I got a rude awakening one time. I think my first year pro, we were talking about Christmas time and what was the best gifts you got. And I said, oh man, wasn't that cool when you're a kid, you went to the band office and they give you the big box of, they give you a turkey, some canned food, and there'd be some toys in it. And one guy said, well, what? And I said, don't you guys have a band office? They said, no. I said, Ted, that's what welfare people do. I said, really? So it kind of busts my bubble a little bit, but heck, that's what we did, and that's who I am, and I wouldn't change it for the world.
Yeah, but Teddy, it's amazing because, like, you know, you talk about talking to young kids, you know, drug abuse, alcohol abuse, I mean, things that happen, you know, on the reservation, but what made you different? How did you defy the odds? How did you make it?
Well, I think the thing that really defined me early was both my parents. My parents are very, very proud First Nation people. My mother did a play on the reserve when we were growing up, and her grandfather did it, and his grandfather did it. It was called the Hiawatha Play. And so we were very culturally induced when we were kids and being proud of who we are. My father always told me, he said, don't ever take anything from the government, and don't take anything for free. Anything you want in life, you work for it. Mm. So I kind of had a real strong upbringing in that, and I guess someone seen me play, and they invited me to do the Sioux, of all places, the Sioux St. Marie Greyhounds training camp when I was about 16. I didn't make the team, but they sent me to the Manitoba Junior League, and I think that's the straw that really broke the camel's back, far as me wanting to be a player, because right. I never grew up wanting to be a National Hockey League player because we didn't have TV. I didn't know what it was. So, but as you grow and you learn a little bit about it, then you see it, and you see other people doing it. And when I was 16, I went to Kenora, and it was such a miserable. I've never liked fighting in hockey. I never did, but I had to learn how. So, and I'm from a boxing family. My brother was a pro boxer. My two uncles were boxers. My two cousins were on the 84 Olympic team that got canceled in LA, I believe. But anyways, we were from a boxing family, so we knew how to take care of ourselves. So I went to Kenora. I had to fight to survive. And the more they picked on me, the more they called me names, the more I wanted to shove it up their rear and say, I could play just like you can. And I think more of the drive to show that I could versus wanting to play.
All right, listen. Normally Cam asks the dumb questions. I have a dumb question. I got a bad question.
Go ahead.
Can
I be the journalist then?
But I want to know, Teddy. In the States, we call it like the reservation, right? And we call them Native Americans. In Canada, it's First Nation. Like, what differentiates the two? Is that a dumb question?
No, there's no such thing as a dumb question as far as I'm concerned. There's no differentiation. I think Native American is what they've been using in the States for so long. And over here in Canada, geez, we were called Indians when I was growing up. And then it went to Aboriginal. Then the latest is First Nation. And I think First Nations is kind of incorporate three of our peoples here in Canada, particularly with the Innu people up in up north. And the Métis people. So it kind of incorporates all of us into one group. But so we switched. I'm not 100% sure when we switched names to First Nation people, but that's what we're referred to now. And when I talk to them, my brothers and sisters over in the United States, we always say Native American. So either or.
Okay.
And it wasn't that bad.
It wasn't that bad?
I'll stump you on my
bad
question.
I was just like, I had to know the answer.
Teddy, I want
to
know, though, about your ancestors. Like, do you know your great-great-grandfather, like, what he did? Like, do you know where you came from? And, like, explain that, because I'm very curious when it comes to that kind of stuff.
Well, you know, it's when you haven't got TV and you haven't got, we got a radio. But when you haven't got TV, you got to talk and you got to communicate and you got to learn from where you're from and in order to know where you're going. And so we're very blessed with storytellers. We've been listening to our stories forever and how we came about and how Turtle Island and so forth and some of our rich. 'Cause a long time ago, they never had medicines to cure. So you have to get it off the land. And so you're kind of curious, what did you do when you got a cut? Mm-hmm. And they talked about getting the sap from a tree. And how did you, when women had the menstrual period, what did you do? And all those type of things. So
we talked a lot. But, what did you do with that, by the way? I'm curious.
You know, that one, I'll share it another time. But some of them are, you know, when you have torn ligaments, grabbing some fat from an animal and putting it on top of that, it's kind of like salt pork.
Yeah.
You put it on top of the, if you have a sore knee, you heat it up just like a heat pad. You put it on top of the knee and it sucks out all that stuff that from ligament injury, and it seems to heal. You know, our four medicines, like the sage and the sweet grass, and you know, those are all kind of put together. So it's kind of a really interesting. But anyways, that's what we talked about all the time. We had powwows and gatherings all the time. We danced around the drum. And one of the things is really kind of cool. We used to call these things called 49ers. And at the end of the powwow day, we dance, we celebrate, and we share stories. But at nighttime, we have a thing called the 49ers. And I wasn't 100% sure what it was, but it was a long time ago, some of our warriors went off to war. And they said they would sing an honor song for all the warriors who came back. And only 49 came back, so they drummed a song in their honor. And they talked stories the whole night. So it was kind of a cool thing. We have medicine people, and we have sweat lodges. And so that's what we talked about all the time. But we don't learn it in schools. But we learned it at home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting, man.
Because I'm always wondering, like, from a traditional standpoint, you just kind of answered it. You have the powwows. Like, are people truly wearing, like, the Indian headdresses? And I'm curious from your standpoint, Teddy, like, when you see the Washington Redskins and some of these teams, the Fighting Sioux, University of North Dakota, they changed their name. They changed the mascot. Like, are you offended by the Chicago Blackhawks and some of these names?
Redskins,
man, that you see, you know, some of these, you know, traditional historical organizations changing the name of the mascot. Where do you stand on that?
Well, I'm with the protester. I think every culture has rich meaning behind what they do. And our regalia and our powwows are very significant to us. Our ceremonies are very significant to us. You know, I've been going to sweat lodges since I was, since I could remember. And so when you see people with a baseball cap with a red skin on it, I mean, it's just kind of, it's one of those talks you have to have. You can't call someone the N word anymore. You can't call one of our people derogatory names, and you can't call Asian derogatory names. So all those things are very hurtful. So I'm kind of glad to see a lot of things transpiring. And I tell you, you guys, I love this story. When I was coaching the Buffalo Sabres, even when I coached the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds, I had ceremony with both teams. Mm. There's one time, and I guess in Windsor Arena, they said the Sioux Greyhounds haven't won there in something like 10 years. I'm going, what's that? So anyways, I did a little ceremony at Center Ice game day. We went down for a pregame skate. We won the game 6-2 that night.
Wow. I broke the curse.
Did people in Windsor get pissed about that?
No, it was just a simple ceremony that we have, and then I had one with the Buffalo Sabres. I brought a medicine man right into the dressing room at Joe Louis Arena, and I think we won. That's the year I won Coach of the Year. We won 16 of our last 17 games. We won the Northeast Division title, and what have you. So it was very. I just think it's really cool for people to learn where people are come from. It's not, and I think that's one thing in sports we don't do very much. And say, hey, Cam. Where are you from? Where's your family originated from? We don't ask those questions amongst each other, and if we don't ask them, how do we know? And even with our demeanors, like we're a quiet people, and when our elders speak to us, we're taught to look down, not to look to show respect.
Yeah,
but when you do that to a hockey coach, you think you're uninterested. So it's kind of a thing that everybody should learn.
Mm-hmm.
No, I completely understand. And it's funny when people don't ask me where my parents are from because I don't think they really care. Like, I'm from, like, in middle Missouri. But for you, and your historical aspect of things, like, I'm like, God, I'm curious of where you came from. So it's like, you know, I feel like no one really gives a shit where my parents came from. But like, so let me explain something. Let me ask you something, though. You know, when it comes to names with teams, like, where do you draw the line? So is, if you're referring to a Blackhawks, which could, I believe it's a chief that was an ass kicker. This was awesome, and everybody respected him. So like, that's okay. But the Redskin name is kind of like, okay, it's kind of like a derogatory name. Like, no, you're typecasting somebody. Mm-hmm. So like, what's the difference between all these different names of these sports teams?
Hey, you know, you're right. There's some names that are respectful, like Sitting Bull. You don't disrespect Sitting Bull. He was one of our most famous leaders of all time. So you don't put Sitting Bull on a cap and say, hey, let's go Bulls. You know, those type of things. And you just got to learn to show respect for different races and for our people. We've been here from the beginning.
Yeah,
we've been here. We're not. You know, when people tell us get back to the reservation, back to the land that we're originated from. So it's one of those things that history is a great thing to learn and to teach one another. So it's just one of those things where when I was coaching the Quebec League, one of the arenas had a mannequin of a Indian, like a First Nation person with a headdress. And every time the home team scored a goal, they strung this guy along the They strung this mannequin across the rink, and before I went to the arena, they asked if I'd be offended, and I said I certainly would be offended, and I said, well, it's how we do it in respect of your people. I'm going, and John Christian, one of our former prime ministers here in Canada, that was his hometown, and I said, well, how would you like if we made a mannequin of him and put him against our power grounds to show him respect? So it just doesn't add up. So they took it down. And we just play the game and just get mad at somebody because you're mad at them because they beat you.
The Cam and Strick podcast is brought to you by CarShield. You know, nothing more frustrating, Cam, than when that engine light comes on and you know right off the bat you're going to have to spend thousands of dollars to repair your vehicle. Call 800-857-2481. Mention the promo code CAM. Or visit carshield.com and use the code CAM to save 10%. Yeah. That's carshield.com. A deductible may apply. Save yourself money. Cam. Sign up and get your coverage now with carshield.com. Cam. Now back to the interview. I do have another question, though, for you. Because, you know, like here in the States where we grew up, people think of racism. You think black versus white.
Yep.
That's where, you know, that's what racism is. And it's completely different up in Canada. I want to talk about how racist Canada can be when it comes to First Nation people. And you've experienced that. Like, how would you describe experiencing racism? What does that feel like, Teddy?
Oh, man. I tell you, when I first left home to go to Kenora, Ontario, to play in the Manitoba Junior League, I faced it a little bit going to school, but there's a lot of us who from the reserve that we hopped on the same school bus. We all went to the same school, and you know, there's five or six of us, and thankfully we were a little bit tougher than the average kid at that time. So anybody picked on us, we could always get them at recess or wait for after school because there's a lot of us.
Oh yeah.
but when you go by yourself, it's a little bit more terrifying. So I went to Kenora. I mean, I literally cried myself to sleep for the first 2 months in town. I despised the game. I didn't like the game, and I do this a lot of my presentations. From the age of 16, I went from loving the game to just trying to survive in the game, and it just went from there from the rink. And there's one time I was downtown, and at the time I was a young kid that smoked cigarettes. So I went out and had a cigarette outside of this Holiday Inn that was on the water, and I was leaning against this truck, and lo and behold, I didn't know there was a guy inside with a girl. And he comes up, "What are you looking at? You stinking Indian!" And he was a man, and I was a 16-year-old kid, and he grabbed me, and the building was built on this on the waterway, and there was about a 20-foot drop into the water, into the rocks, and this, I swear to God, this guy was going to throw me over, and And I wrestled like crazy. And thankfully, some of my friends that were with me at the time, they come over and rescued me. But I wouldn't even be here talking to you. But that's how bad it was.
Why, though? Like, why? I just don't get it. Like, why? You know, we have just a different, completely different atmosphere here with when it comes to racing. So I lived in Canada. I did see that a little bit with guys on our team when you see the fans do that. But I just don't understand why. Like, what's the point of it? I don't get why they think they're inferior.
Yeah, you know, I could never have understand that either. And like, even with how the black people are treated in the United States, and then now with the Asian people, and you know, people are afraid of what they don't know. And I think once they learn that, you know, we're good people. We're all good people, and just got to learn to live and work together and be the same. You know, same thing when I started coaching in hockey. Everybody, I heard this saying all the time. We all got to say, get on the same page, and we're all on the same page. It's a pretty boring book if everybody's on the same page. Yeah. It's good to have differences, and it's good to have a difference of opinion and what have you. And that's what makes the world interesting. So when you see someone who is a little bit different, we should honor them as much as we honor ourselves.
Yeah, and we'll get into your coaching. But, I mean, you were good enough to make it to the NHL. I mean, you were a player, and you played for two different franchises. What about in the NHL as a player? Did things calm down then, or were you experiencing similar racism when you were playing in the NHL?
Not so much in the NHL, a little bit here and there, but in the minors. There's a lot in the minors. You know, when you're playing against opposition, they go by their bench and they do the old wahoo cry on the bench and tell you get back and you want to go for a drink after a game, all those type of things. And even when I coach in the National Hockey League, some players skate by the bench and they give that wahoo sign or pretend you're staggering, skating in front of the bench. And even some of the coaches on the other side would give the old wahoo single on their lips when the cameras weren't looking.
So wow. What? Teddy?
What did Rob Ray have to say about that?
Whoa. Before you liked the blatant stuff. If somebody didn't like the way I looked, tell me how I looked and put that sneaky stuff, and they do it on the side when no one's looking. That's even more cowardly than it was doing it blatantly. So those type of things, they happen all the time. Like even when I was coaching with the Moncton Wildcats, the Quebec League, once again, I had to get escorted out of the rink one game in Chicoutimi because it got so bad. And I remember the police officer was saying, we'll escort you to the bus. I said, I don't need no escort. And I walked out and I was just praying someone would do something.
But oh, yeah.
Thankfully they didn't. And I made it out. So, but you know, it's a good thing with learning, getting our players to learn that everybody is from somewhere else. And everybody has feelings and emotions and brothers and sisters and all those type of things. And you know, we might not like each other competing against each other, which is fine, but to not to like someone because of the way they look is totally unacceptable.
Well, I just see they're jealous of you. They looked at you and you're like, well, you got a great tan, you got an unbelievable hair, and you're built and you're an athlete. So I'm going to make fun of you because you are a lot more superior than me when it comes to the optics part. But isn't that weird though, man? Like guys, just it is crazy. And again, it's different in the United States, but when you went to Sault Ste. Marie though, and you're right there, you're playing juniors, and you had, what's his name again? Number 99, Andy? What's his name?
Wayne something.
Teddy. I forgot his last name, but how was that? And like, did he talk to you? Was he great? Like, I mean, we had him on the podcast. He's such an unbelievable guy. We all know that, but like, explain your experience with 99.
Oh, he was, I tell you what, you know, everybody talks, that's a lot of questions about Wayne when I played with him in junior hockey. And the only thing I remember is how hard the bugger worked all the time. I mean, he was, I remember our coach, Mr. McPherson, happened to kick him off the ice because he's on the ice so much. And he only weighed about 145 pounds soaking wet.
Yeah.
And when we seen him at training camp, I, you know, all this hype, and that's how naive I was. I didn't know they had a draft system. I just thought everybody got invited to try out for the Sioux Greyhounds or whatever team they went to. And here this kid came up from Southern Ontario, blonde-haired kid, and looked about just a skinny little guy. And I said, oh, man, he's going to get murdered. And in the first game, I think we beat Ottawa 6-1 or 8-1 or something. He had like 6 goals and 1 assist. I'm going, wow. And it was such a cool thing because back then they had this shootout, maybe because Wayne was Wayne. But every time we went to play an opposition team, in between the second and third period, they always have a shootout between Wayne and the leading scorer of the other team and a junior B kid that was playing on a local junior B team. So they have shootouts in between as an extra bonus to the hockey game. I thought it was one of the coolest things. And Wayne would skate by and say, watch this one. And he'd come down and pretend he's going to backhand it and pull it through his forehand, pull it in. So it was a pleasure to play with him. It was a pleasure to watch him. And I think by watching a player like him, you getting an opportunity to play with a guy like him, taught you without him really teaching you is I got to work on my game here too a little bit. If the best player in the world is doing what he's doing, you're going to do the same thing.
Oh. So it's okay. So yeah, it's great for Wayne to go do a shootout after he gets done playing a period, and then he goes against a junior B guy and he could do whatever he wants. But if that was me and I got done with a period and then the junior B kid just like owns me, like I'd be kind of pissed off about that. I don't know if I like that rule, Daddy. I'm not going to lie to you.
But
yeah, I don't think Wayne was going to be too worried when somebody from a junior B level was going to show him up.
No shit. Hey, but do you still keep in touch with Wayne? And like when you were going through your issues, which we're going to get to, like coaching, trying to find a job, like did he ever reach out to you or even try to help you?
You know what? Maybe because of the way I was when I played hockey, I could never. I had my cars packed after the last game. If I knew if next Wednesday was going to be my last game, my car would be packed. I'd leave after the game and go home. That's how much. And I think people don't know the magnitude of that emotional impact that you have when you went when I went to. My first pro camp after, and it's going to go back to the year when I went in Kenora, how tough it was. Then I played with the Sioux Greyhounds, and people don't even know that. I was left behind twice. I was left on the side of the road and going down to Sudbury for an exhibition game. I was the last guy paying for my food coming out of the store, and I looked out, the bus was gone.
Really? Your team left you?
Wait, what, Teddy?
My team left me.
Did they know that they were leaving you? Or did they turn around and come back? Uh-oh, we forgot Teddy?
That's happened to me one time in Texas one time.
Yeah, they left you on purpose.
They left
you.
So
what happened there, Teddy?
So I hitchhiked. I got on the other side of the road. Thankfully, a truck driver was going by, and he was going down to Sudbury, and he drove me right to the rink, and I made it in time for the game. I got dressed, and that's when I got hit in the eye by a stick. And I spent about a week, I almost lost the side of my eye. I got stuck in the eye, so I spent about a week in a hospital down in Sudbury, but I made it. And another time I was in London, went down to make a phone call, just called some of my friends that were around. And I came out, the bus was gone again. But this time I happened to be with a pretty rich kid from Sault Ste. Marie, and his father was a lawyer back home, and so they made a big ruckus over that. But twice I got left behind. So, and then when you get drafted to go to pro hockey and you don't really know how to get it was kind of sink or swim, how to get apartments and what have you. Thankfully, my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, she came with me, and thankful she came because I would never have went. I was so afraid to go and not knowing how to get an apartment, not knowing how to buy a car, bank account, all those type of things that people take for granted. So it was a scary, scary time. But thankfully, my wife, who's we've been married now for 41 years, thankful she came with me. If she didn't, I would never win.
Oh, I get that, man. Trust me. So okay, when I was joking about the St. Louis Sting Andy team leaving me in Texas, they just forgot I was there because I was talking to somebody. But then they came back and got me. But these guys leaving you, was there more to it? Like, how can they be like, is he not here? Like, and he's good. He'll hitchhike.
And the coach just say, go ahead and go.
Like, how does that happen, and why did that happen?
Well, you know, I ask that question myself all the time, but it was somebody that was somebody from the city. It didn't look like me. Would they have left him? Would their parents have put up with it? And my sister, bless her soul, she passed away the year I got the Buffalo Sabres job. She was one of our more vocal people in our family. She went up to the Sioux Greyhound office the next day and just blasted them for leaving me behind. But wow. Those are the type of things that I had to go through and overcome. And I just kind of learned how to survive in the game. And it's funny, but when I got injured, when I was playing with the Pittsburgh Penguins, when I got injured and I couldn't play anymore, I was probably happier that day than I was when I got drafted to the National Hockey League. I was happy that I didn't have to go through all this stuff anymore. I didn't, and I wasn't a big guy. I'm only 6 foot. I played at 180. And fighting some of these guys that come at you, I mean, they're 6'4", they're 240. I'm going, holy man, pick on some of your own size. But so you're afraid before some of the games because you knew somebody's going to come at you. And when I played, we got in that Philadelphia Flyers Broad Street Bully era. So their farm teams were the same thing, and all the guys in the American Hockey League were pretty big, tough guys. It was a tough thing, but thankfully we had a pretty good team in the American Hockey League. We won the team, and we had Dave Hansen on the team, and we won the Calder Cup. We had Peter Mahovlich on the team, Tom Bladen, two experienced guys. Bill Hogebaum, to this day, was probably one of the best guys I ever played with because he's the one who really taught me how to be a pro. He taught me how to make sure you act this way, make sure you do this, and what have you. So I owe a great gratitude to him. But it was I learned quite a bit from the players. But when I was done, I was glad.
So when this stuff happens, and you know they, you know you're put in a spot where you feel like you're not, no one cares about you. Aren't you friends with some of the guys on a team to where they could step up and be like, well, dude, we're missing Teddy. He's back there at the truck stop. Like, can we pull around? Or is everybody just like, I'm just going to keep quiet because this is the way it is?
You know what? That's for life of me, I don't know. You would think that would happen. I mean, if I'm sitting on a bus and I know there's somebody missing, I would speak. Yeah. I mean, it's common courtesy to do that. But for some reason, it didn't happen. Then we get to all this stuff in in hockey, there's a couple of players that told me to go take a flying leap off a donut when I was playing with them, and called me a racial name on the bench. And I wanted to hit him so much right on the,
you should have,
the game.
You should have.
But I couldn't. I waited in between periods and I got him then.
All right, good.
There you go. I was
wondering. Jesus.
But this is your teammate. These are the guys that you're with. And then a coach, he was going to show everybody how Nolan learns how to stick handle. So he turned the stick into a tomahawk, and he started beating the puck. I'm going, that's a gun. So I charged him too, and I hit him, and that's the day I punched the coach as hard as I could.
Good.
And I jumped on him in the American Hockey League, and then I came home, told my wife, I said, better pack up, we're out of here. And I said, what happened? I said, well, the coach made some racial gestures for me, and I didn't know what else to do, so I hit him.
So anyway, well, I'm going to fucking hit him now too, Teddy. That's how it's going to be.
Hey, but Teddy, when you're coaching in the Sioux, because like you eventually transition, like you start coaching, and you have great success, you win a Memorial Cup, and I think you went to 3 straight Memorial Cups.
Yeah, you did.
But you coached some great players. Adam Foote was a guy that you coached. Bob Bugner, I believe. Steve Sullivan. There's a number of guys that you coached. But Chris Simon is the one guy that stands out. And I'm so interested to learn about him. And from what I understand, talking to one of your former players, he tells me about how you suspended him and you sent him home 1 year. Tell me about that story.
Well, you know, that there's certain things I think we as coaches have to help our athletes and see what's going on. And, you know, we'll get into the Pat LaFontaine situation later too. I mean, when Petty was misdiagnosed with his injury and the doctors cleared him to play, I'm going, I can't play this guy. Mm-hmm. You have to take. Yep. So anyway, same thing would happen to Chris. I thought he was doing some things that weren't right. He wasn't treating his teammates right. He wasn't getting in for curfew properly. He did some things to opposition players I wasn't crazy about. And I said, I'm not going to wait for the league to suspend you. I'll suspend you.
Ooh.
until we start clearing up some of this stuff. And I think I sat him out for a week to 2 weeks. It maybe seemed like a month at the time, but maybe it could have been 3 days. But I suspended him. And I said, you're not going to get back on the team until behaviors change. Curfew is curfew. It's it doesn't mean, and I give him a curfew. I think everybody else is 11 o'clock in junior hockey. I give him 9 o'clock.
Wow.
And so if you miss one time, you're going back to Wawa, his hometown. And I said, you're going to be at the, and during the suspension, I have to give Chris a lot of credit, boy, because during the suspension, I got him to show up at the rink at 6 o'clock in the morning.
And he should, Teddy.
And he showed up, right?
Hey, and you got to watch out for the billets, because the billets are going to be friends with them. So you can call the billets and be like, is he in bed? Mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah, he is. Meanwhile, he's out doing his thing, mm-hmm. because the billets are in cahoots with the players. How'd you deal with that?
Sometimes we have pretty good billets in the Sioux. And the hardest part for Chris, because we practiced and he ran the stairs while we practiced. So, But I'll give him credit. I give him a couple of choices of what he wanted to do, whether he wanted just to leave or go home or you want to stick it out. And I'm certainly glad that he did. And he had a, you know, luxurious career. He won the Stanley Cup in Washington there. I know Colorado, I believe. But anyways, he had a great career. He paid the price what it took to get to that level. And here's a guy that had so much skill and for a big man and how tough he was, and he had a good career.
Let me ask you this. And he did have a great career. And, you know, he had, you know, a few suspensions in the NHL, too. But he had a great career, and he had a brand to his game, man. I love watching him play. But do you think you were harder on him because he came from a similar background as you, and you knew what he had to go through to get there, and you didn't want to see him mess up that opportunity because you knew if he did, Teddy, that you knew what his life would be if he wasn't going to take advantage of what he could potentially be as a hockey player?
Well, but even back up before I suspended him, either I had to do something myself or listen to the team and just get rid of him. And I wouldn't do that. And so it was just, yeah, let's trade him, let's get rid of the problem. I mean, that's what a lot of people do. It's easy. That's an easy thing to do, is get rid of the problem. And until you want to work with the problem and deal with some of the issues. So we worked with him. Denny Lambert was another one who had a pretty good career. When I got to the Sioux Greyhounds, he was one of our other players. One of the first things to do is, we got to get rid of Denny. He doesn't show up on time for practice. Well, anybody ever tell him? Anybody ever show him? Exactly. So we worked with Denny. Fair enough, he made it all the way to the National Hockey League, played over 500 games. He's a police officer in Sault Ste. Marie. He won Citizen of the Year. And he's a really good person. So, But you got to work with people. I don't care who they are. And being from the same background, I think it had a little bit more incentive to make sure that we paid attention.
Yeah, I like that, man. I like it a lot, because I like when GMs and coaches take chances on guys mm-hmm. that don't know better. They don't know.
You have to show them.
You don't know. Like Lou Lamoriello did that, and I always pump his tires up because I love that man. But like, he took chances on guys that were kind of like, they had the skill. Maybe their background was a little messy. But I can get you, and I could lead you into the right path. I mean, that's got to be a good feeling for you to see some of these guys where you're like, I'm going to get you out of that hellhole, and I'm going to bring you here. You got to do what I say. No one's ever told you to do anything, but you're going to listen to me. And most of the time, they probably do.
Well, you know what? In all the teams that I was with, particularly in junior, we always had players that we picked up on that we got through two waivers that were playing on a junior C team somewhere. I've always found one of those guys that could come in and make a difference. I mean, there was a kid in Sault Ste. Marie, his name was Sean Gagne. And I guess at the time he was playing for Ottawa in the Ottawa 67s, and he played on another team. And I was walking in the rink one day, and I seen this big kid skating with Lunch Hour Hockey. And I said, who's he? He looked pretty good. You know, when you play against a 60-year-old as a 19-year-old, I guess you're going to look pretty good. And I found out who he was, and somebody told me he got waived in through the Ontario Hockey League. I'm going, how come we didn't pick him up? So anyways, we claimed him and signed him up, and he was number four defenseman and helped us go to the Memorial Cup and end up playing pro hockey. So people just need opportunities. Just need opportunities no matter who you are. And usually some things, there's some really good ending stories to them.
Time to talk about our boy Dan Bellman. Ooh. Bellman.com. That's with two N's, not one. BehlmannN.com. Hey, check out the new inventory. Check out the pre-owned vehicles. You looking for a Chrysler, a Dodge, a Jeep, a Ram? How about a Cadillac or a Buick GMC? All in Troy, Missouri. get your new wheels in time for the winter. Now back to the interview.
All right, you're most known for your time in Buffalo, though, as an NHL coach where you had success. You mentioned Jack Adams. I mean, your team was unbelievable. You win the Jack Adams. The GM wins GM of the year. Michael Pacha wins the Selke Trophy. You had a goaltender who won the Vezina and the Hart, I believe, all in one season. Like, this is just stuff that you can't make up. And I talked to a couple of your players, man. They absolutely love you, man.
Love you,
and,
Teddy.
And, I mean, a guy like Brad May even says, like, you're his favorite coach he's ever had. But one thing they all say is that Dominic Hasek, best goaltender they've ever seen. They loved having him as a teammate because of his ability to play goal, but they all said...
He's a fucking dick.
I shouldn't say they all said, but a couple of them said he was a terrible teammate, a bad guy. Like, what was your experience with Dominic Hasek? Did you guys not get along?
Well, you know, I thought we did. And then you read when I got let go, or read one paper that he wanted. He wanted me gone for the next season, whatever. But anyways, long story short, I met Dom about 5 years ago. Again, that's the first time I really talked to him. And... he never said anything. We talked like it was a long time ago, but I never had a personal conflict with Dom. Obviously, he did some stuff off the ice that a lot of players do that you're not happy with, and you talk to him about it. But I really loved that group of players we had. Jeez, we're known as the hardest working team in professional sport that year. I tell you, we worked our tail off. We had Brad May and Rob Ray and Matthew Barnaby and a whole bunch of. We were led by Patty LaFontaine, and we had the best goalie in hockey, in Dominic Hasek. So it was a very entertaining year, and I'll tell you, that was probably one of the true testaments as far as coaching is to get a group of guys that maybe didn't achieve what they should have achieved, and to win the Northeast Division title and to go on. I thought we were going to win the Stanley Cup within a couple of years, and all of a sudden, boom, the world, somebody turned the lights off. Yeah. And I was out of hockey for a long time, and I'm not on social media, so I don't know what's said, and maybe sometimes better off not knowing. Mm-hmm. And then about three, I was frustrated, I was angry, I was mad. So why wouldn't anybody? I mean, I just won Coach of the Year. I took my team to three straight Memorial Cups in junior hockey. I won the Calder Cup. I think I know how to coach. And there was one job. Phil Esposito did offer me the Tampa Bay job at the time. And Brandon, my son, Cam, you'd be remember him.
He was
drafted in Jersey. I think you guys were roommates the first his first training camp.
What a so, poor kid. That poor. I'm so sorry about everything I've done. I'm sorry, Teddy. I love you and your family.
Can we send Cam home, too?
I'm sorry.
Come on now,
he's
Teddy.
He's a sweet. What a handsome bugger he is, too, by the way.
And we know Jordan, man, from his time here in St. Louis, too, man. Great
love
kid.
Love them both.
I mean, I don't know how you – listen, you develop both your kids into playing professional hockey. One is still playing, I believe. And Jordan, obviously, was a big part of L.A.'s two-time Stanley Cups that they won. And then – obviously won another one here in St. Louis, man. So whatever you did with your kids, you did it right.
You did it right, Teddy.
Well, I'll tell you what, if I was still coaching, Jordan would be a guy, he'd fit into my style perfectly. Because, like I said, I love aggressive hockey. Mm-hmm. I've always did. And there's a difference between hitting and separating a man from the puck. I mean, don't just go run and jump at people and get your elbows up in the air and hit them in the head and do some crazy stuff. I mean, body contact is part of the sport, and we used to practice that in the Sioux Greyhounds all the time. And I still remember we met Eric Lindros didn't want to come to the Sioux, so we traded him to Oshawa Generals. And lo and behold, who do we meet in the finals to go to Memorial Cup? We met Oshawa.
Ooh.
And I still remember we hit him as much as we hit anybody in hockey, because I could tell you our team was very aggressive. And we beat them in, I think we beat them in six games. We went to the Memorial Cup that year. But my teams have always been aggressive, but within the rules.
Okay, so we had Big E on, by the way, the podcast. We get everybody on, Teddy, just so you know. But we had him on, I kind of understand the Quebec thing, maybe, I guess. I still don't. I wouldn't ever do that. But the junior thing, though, where he didn't want to report to Sue because
it was too far from
too
his
far
house.
From Oshawa, it's still like 3 or 4 hours. Like, I mean, it's not that big of a deal. Like in the OHL, like you're not that far apart one way or the other. So, what was your like? What were you guys thinking as an ownership group and the organization? Like, this kid's not coming. Like, what was your thought on that?
Well, I still remember with our general manager, Sherry Bassin, and our head scout and our ownership group, and Phil Esposito. He was part of the group. We went to Eric's house the day before the draft, and we tried to convince him that Sault Ste. Marie's a good place, and Eric and his family made up their mind that they weren't coming. And I still remember walking out that day and saying, hey, we're going to draft him anyways, and which we did. We drafted him, and we traded. We traded him to his hometown, which made him happy and made us happy, because we got something like 7 years of players for his time that we spent in Oshawa. So it was good for him. He went to play in his hometown, but more beneficial to us because we went to three straight Memorial Cups on pretty well all the players that we got from that trade.
Mm. Was it gas money that he was worried about, Teddy? I mean, like, what the fuck?
I'm not 100% sure, because almost everybody before I get the coach of the Greyhounds weren't a very good team. They looked sloppy. Their uniforms were untucked. They're tucking in. They just didn't look very good. And so we wanted to change things around a little bit. And I said, people will come to organizations. I don't care how far they are if they win. And we got to start winning. And so, anyways, we cleaned it up pretty good. And then all of a sudden, we started drafting these kids that. I weren't crazy about coming up to Sault Ste. Marie because it is a little bit further off off the beaten path. But once they got there, we couldn't get the buggers to leave. And and there's still some players that were from Southern Ontario that ended up meeting girls in the Sioux and end up making their lives that are still living in Sault Ste. Marie, 25 years later.
Wow.
I think I met a girl in Sioux too, by the way, Teddy.
Listen, I got to understand Dominic Hasek, though, because I believe when you got to the playoffs – like, he wasn't available to play for you because he physically attacked a reporter. He got suspended three games for that. And then you get through that, and then he is on the ice, and then he says he's unavailable, his knee hurt. Like, did you have a hard time with him? Like, was he dramatic? Did it take him time to mature as a person, as an adult?
He's old, though.
How frustrated were you dealing with that, though, Teddy?
It was very, very frustrating. I mean, when you get paid to play, I don't care who you got to play for. They're still getting paid to play, and when you don't want to, that's more frustrating. But then, as I learned this early in my coaching career, very early, and I learned it in life growing up. I had to learn to win with what I had, mm-hmm. or you don't win at all.
Yep.
So I couldn't complain. I couldn't sit down and worry about Dom not wanting to play or whatever was going on with him at the time. I had to worry about the group that we had, and we beat Ottawa in the first round that playoffs. And, and if Dom was there, who knows what we could have done, because it was such a hard working group. So, and we lost Philly 4-1 or whatever the next series was. But goaltending is very important. But I can't.
Did you think he was hurt? Did you think he was hurt?
Well, he thought he was hurting. That's the main thing.
Okay. What about John Muckler? Like, what should people know about him? Why couldn't the two of you exist together?
Yeah, John, bless his soul, he just recently passed away also. And it was just one of those things that when I took over, my coaching method is it was a lot different from the old school type of I remember Gary Galley saying, commenting, said, we had so many days off this year. I never had this many days off in my whole career. And I think he played about 10 years previous to that, because I always believed in rest. And you work hard, you got to rest your body in order to maintain that. So I give the guys a lot of days off. And John wasn't too crazy about that. I said, another day off. I said, well, they're working, they're competing. So he didn't like that. And he wanted me to take the captaincy away from Pat LaFontaine, and I wouldn't do that. I'm a rookie coach, and I was more at night, but not last night. And I said, I can't take it from him. And if you want to take it from him, you go ahead. But they get upset about that, and about certain people who are in the lineup. And I think that's one thing that has to change. And coaches have to have the ultimate say on who's in the lineup. If they don't, then they're going to have trouble.
Yeah, oh, no doubt about it. Oh, God. I could only imagine that. Oh, I want this guy in. Well, no, you have the. So, like, with Patty LaFontaine, though, like, he's concussed. Like, why would he want the captaincy away from him in that particular situation?
Superstar
player. Yeah, that's what I asked. I said, why? So he didn't think he was a very good captain, and I thought he was, and so we just had a difference of opinion. I refused to take it from him, and Petty was he's top 100 players in the world, yeah. And I tell you, he's a top person in the world. So he's a really, really good. He's a great individual. So there's no way I was going to touch him. And from that time to this day, Petty and I still have a really good relationship, and he's a really good man. So
yeah,
he's
the first player from St. Louis make it to the NHL. He's not. No, Cam Teddy, thinks he is.
Teddy, I'm the first one ever. Patty LaFontaine like only stayed here till he was like 6 years old. So I'm the I'm the first one ever.
But you know, he came back here a few years back, and we actually did a television feature. Went back to his house where he lived at here in St. Louis, and the rink where he learned how to skate and all that type of stuff. So
don't make me defend myself.
Who did Muckler want to give the C to?
Yeah,
take it off the jersey and give it to who?
You know, that was never brought up. And I guess it was just a short...
Barnaby. he wanted to give it to Barney.
One of those guys. So anyways, it was just one of those topics that I wouldn't go to. I was a rookie coach. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was still, you know, relatively young. I was a young, very young coach coming in. And all of a sudden you walk into a National Hockey League office or room and say, hey, Patty, I'm going to take your captaincy. I'm going, that would have been suicide for me right from the get-go. So I didn't do it. And, you know, there's like even a couple of players, they kind of test you early about when you're so young coming in. And at the time, so you put certain rules out and players kind of have a tendency to break them a little bit. And so you just got to stand firm and let them know who's in control, and everything kind of works out.
You know, it's amazing because there was so much drama with Buffalo, and like not much has changed when you consider what Buffalo's going through right now. Hey, let's talk about the new Bud Light Seltzer.
Oh, yeah.
It's an easy drinking hard seltzer that comes in four delicious fruit flavors. Mm. Black cherry, strawberry, lemon lime, and Cam's favorite, mango.
With
only 100 calories, 5% alcohol, and less than a gram of sugar, you might as well have a few tonight or this weekend. Mm. Go to BudLight.com to buy Bud Light Seltzer online. Must be 21 years of age or older. Bud Light Seltzer. Unquestionably good.
Yeah.
Now back to the interview. So you win the Jack Adams. You guys have a great season, all these individual awards. And I believe Muckler got fired before you, right? So were you thinking like at all, like when you won the award, that you weren't going to go back to Buffalo? Did you just assume that you were going to get a long-term contract extension? So how did it play out that they only offered you a one-year deal? And from what I understand, it wasn't for a whole lot of money either in terms of what the rest of the coaches were making. So you can pick it up from that. Did they meet you on the tarmac at an airport? That's what I was told. So, like, you know, help finish that story there.
Well, it was one of those, and I knew, you know, when John got let go, and there was a couple of commentators saying that I became a GM killer, and I still couldn't figure that one out. But and they started blaming my refusal to work with John as the reason he got fired, and I had nothing to do with him. I was worried about just coaching. So anyways, that came, and then Darcy Regier came in, and we had a couple of calls, and he said we're going to give an olive branch and this, and I knew they didn't want me back. So they went through the token process of pretending they wanted me back, and they give me this offer. And bless his soul, Jim Kelly, Jim Kelly, the reporter from Buffalo. He's a Hockey Hall of Fame.
Hockey News,
And he knows him.
He called me up the night before, I guess, my offer was. He said, Ted, they're making you an offer. I said, offer for me, for coaching? He said, yeah, it's going to be announced tomorrow. I said, well, what's in it? So they never talked to me. They never talked to me about the contract. And the next morning, I still remember talking to Darcy. And he said, we're going to give you a one-year contract. I said, Darcy, so a lot of our land was taken from our people. And we had broken treaties and broken promises because our people couldn't understand English. But I could read and I could write. And don't you think I should take a peek at the contract first before you announce it? And I looked at the contract. It was basically the same type of probably less bonuses or less money than I had the contract that I had. It was a 1 year branch, and I rejected it. And he flew to Sault Ste. Marie the following day. I thought was to talk to me about the contract, but he called me up and just said the contract pulled off the table, we're going to let you go. And that was the end of that.
Wow. Did you, at that point in time, did you regret not taking it, or were you okay with your decision not to, assuming that another opportunity was going to be available presented to you right around the corner when you consider the success you guys were just coming off of?
You know what? The people always ask me that, do you think you should have took it? I mean, there's a, should I have taken the offer from Tampa Bay when Phil Esposito offered me that a couple of months later? But when you had Brandon as a roommate in New Jersey, and for him to get drafted in the National Hockey League, that would never have happened if I was down in Tampa at the time. Their minor hockey system wasn't really good, so I turned it down for family reasons. And turning that offer down from Buffalo, I would do it 100 times over again, because I thought it was a very disrespectful offer. And you even see if I'm not too sure if they showed it down the States, but we did a documentary for TSN.
Yes, huh?
And it was called Unwanted Visitor.
Watch it.
And one of the president of the Sabres at the time said, "We give Ted an offer that we knew he would refuse." Mm-hmm. So
they played,
and they're right. So I refused it, and so he said I was out for about 10 years. I never coached hockey, and I got very frustrated. I give up on the sport. I didn't want to have anything to do with it. And then all of a sudden, I get a call from Robert Irving out in with the Quebec Major Junior League with the Moncton Wildcats, and kind of led back into the Islanders, and even led over to Latvia, where I had a chance to even coach at the Olympic Games. So things kind of worked out.
I know you guys almost knocked off Canada too. That was a great story.
Can I ask almost real quick? Can I go back real quick? You said that I don't remember who you were talking about, but you said that something to the effect of, the Native Americans can't read or write, so therefore we're not giving you this. And you're like, wait, what are you talking about? I'm educated. Like, who said that? Am I right on that? We'll edit this damn thing.
No,
I'd be completely wrong.
No, I said it to Darcy. I said a lot of, and I give him a little bit of a history lesson. A lot of our land was taken away from us because we signed documents that we didn't understand.
Yeah. We'll edit that. We're good. Yeah. Andy gave me the look like I'm an idiot. Sorry about that, Teddy. I'm sorry about that.
Cam's the only one here that can't read or write.
Because I'm like, if somebody said it, I'm like, oh my God, I want to kill this guy. But go ahead.
I just made a kind of a reference to some of the things that our people signed in the past that they didn't understand. And now I understand fully what I'm saying. And so if you don't want me, and I would have been much more happier with somebody say, hey, we don't want you here. Versus and making me an offer that they knew I'd refuse.
Yeah.
All right, so you referenced it earlier in the interview, and even in the TSN special, what was the situation with Pat LaFontaine and his concussion? You knew he wasn't in a good spot. Yeah. You told him, I'm not going to let you play. But the organization, ownership, they were trying to force you to make him play? Explain that.
Well, it was one of those, and it's funny, the call's coming from St. Louis. We had a game in St. Louis the night before, and I think we won the game 3-2 or something. And Patty wasn't himself. He wasn't playing very good. And you know how it is when you sit a superstar, especially back then. And I sat him down for about maybe four shifts. I didn't play him. Then all of a sudden, I got the look. He just looked right up at me, and I put him back out. And then he scored the tying goal, and he set up the winning goal. And we won the game. And then we went back to Buffalo next morning, and we had a nice talk. And when we were talking, I said, how are you feeling? He said, I'm feeling okay. Then we talked a little bit more, and I looked at his eyes. They were a little bit glossy. So the more we talked, the more he opened up, and all of a sudden he got very emotional and said he wasn't feeling very good. And I told him we're going on a road trip this week. We're going on a road trip to play Hartford next morning. And I said, I'll tell certainly everybody that you pulled your groin, that you can't play. And you're not going to play. Why don't you go see your doctor and see what it's about? So I called up Buckler, let them know. And they weren't too crazy with my decision that I wasn't a doctor. Tell him he's going to play. And then I said, I can't. I give him my word. He's going home. And then he got the ownership to call me. And the ownership told me the same thing. Said, Ted, you're not a doctor. Doctor's cleared him to play. He's got to play. We pay him $100. He's got to play. And I said, I can't break my word to him. I told him he's not going to play. I'm not going to tell him he's going to play now. And So anyways, he said, are you refusing our order? I said, respectfully, yes, I am. And in the meantime, Patty's wife, Mary Beth, came to pick him up at practice, took him to the doctor, found out that he had post-concussion syndrome. Okay. And if he would have been hit in that state of mind, who knows what could have happened. So of all the decisions I made in hockey, that was probably one of the best decisions I ever made in my entire life. But then it got to I wouldn't take directions. Then I was a GM killer. Then I was drinking at practice. And then all these rumors started, and I'm going, here I am, a young kid from the reservation back in Northern Ontario. I'm not going to be fighting a big corporation at the NHL. So I just took all the lumps. I took whatever they had to say, and I never fought back, and I just walked out. And then it's funny how St. Louis is really part of this whole thing, because the police officer from St. Louis, when George Floyd and the police officer said, when you don't do anything to the problem, you're complicit to the problem. And here I was, I'm going, I didn't say anything. I didn't say anything back then. Now I want to say something. What happened. And part of the reason I did one, because both my boys were playing, and Cam, you know how the game works. I mean, they take it out on another avenue. So I certainly didn't want them to take it out on Brandon or Jordan. So I zipped it up. But now towards the end of their careers, I should, only thing I'm mad a little bit about, I shouldn't have said something earlier.
Maybe
some of the kids went through it.
Yeah. I'm glad you're speaking politics. Out, but who was spreading these rumors about you? Where are the rumors coming from? Because, you know, there were other rumors too about, even about you having affairs with players' wives and stuff like that, which it's players are saying are completely
ridiculous,
untrue. Like, how much did this bother you, and who's responsible for these rumors, Teddy?
Yeah. Well, you know, that's a bit. I did a thing with Real Sports, I think, with Brian Gumbel, that station.
Oh, yeah, HBO.
They called me up. Yeah, we did a documentary, and they called me up and said, hey, Teddy, we want to do a documentary. This is about 6-7 years later. I said, I'll do it with you. If you find me out, they said people. Tell me who they said. I had an affairs with players' wives. Well, tell me who said it. I was drunk at practice. Tell me who said it. I was disrespectful to the organization. Tell me who said it. And I'll do the interview. And they said, okay, we're the best investigating program there is. We'll find the answers. I never found no answers. And the only reason I found out about it, because I went to a Buffalo Bills game with a former chiropractor who had back problems, and I went to a football game with him. And after the game, he was feeling no pain, and he said, "Ted, I got to tell you about these rumors." I said, "What?" He said, "The reason why they let you go is because you're having affairs with players' wives." I said, "Who said that?" So that was the first time I've heard it, and that was about 5-6 years after the fact. I remember coming home, telling my wife, said, "You know what? Why they let me go in Buffalo? What they're saying." So then people start believing it, which is the craziest thing.
Yeah.
And they start believing that I was drunk at practice, and I'm going. To me, that was probably one of the most, because I worked on a National Native Role Model program for a long time, and talking to kids who have problems with alcoholism and substance abuses. And my mother was killed by a drunk driver. And, yep. And here they were putting me in that frame. So that one really, really hurt personally more than anything. So, all that stuff. I called up a good friend of mine who's a lawyer, and I said, "What do you do?" And I said, "You can't fight a multi-billion corporation." So I just took it on the chin. I sucked it all up, and I went home. And I never said anything until about 5 months ago.
Well, damn. Well, I'll tell you this. It's weird back in the day, and everybody complains about social media now and how everybody can get this, like, you could just grab an army of people and just rag on you. But nowadays, though, Teddy, though, like, you have, like, three or four guys, like, writing stories, so that's the only news you get. But don't you ever consider getting back on social media and explaining your story and explaining different details and scenarios and maybe pumping up different things? Because nowadays, if people crap on you, you could have your own voice because you have your own voice box because of social media.
Yeah, you think of that. But the only thing I was really afraid at the time, Cam, was my oldest boy, Brandon. He was recruited by Harvard and Yale and Brown and Princeton. Wow. And he was a really good team. And he talked me into letting him play the Ontario Hockey League because he wanted to play in the National Hockey League. Mm. So he's the one who convinced me to. And at that time, Brandon was, you know, getting to be 12, 14 years old, and Jordan was 8, and they were starting to understand the real life situations once in a while. And I didn't want him to read all that stuff. So I said, I just walk away. If you just walk away, people hopefully forget about it, and you move on with other things. But I think when one door closes, that's the year I decided after I was done with hockey, I didn't want nothing to do with hockey again. I started the Ted Nolan Foundation, and we raised money to, and I'm very proud to say we raised something like $1.5 to $2 million for First Nation women's education here in Canada. Wow. For scholarship for young girls, young ladies. And we do hockey schools in a lot of our communities that don't have access to hockey schools. Or Brent Jordan comes in with his Stanley. He has 3 Stanley Cup rings.
Yeah, I know.
And comes in with
is that
ring.
It? Teddy?
Is that it? He needs 4. He needs
Teddy,
4.
That's not good enough for him. Okay. Great kid.
Well, if I was coaching, he'd be playing for me for sure.
That's
the type of player I like.
Me too.
Yeah,
man.
no
Me
doubt
too,
about dude. It, man. He was good when he got in the lineup here in St.
Nice
Louis.
Nice kid,
and,
too.
Yeah, and I think it was Hashik's wife. That was the rumor, man. So I don't know who started that. And,
so goofy.
But, you know, a lot of your former players, I want you to know this, though, Teddy. Yep. They have your back.
Oh, yeah.
And they encouraged me to bring that up in this interview because they said, you know what? You deserve a platform to squash a lot of that bullshit that's been said about you. So I'm glad you answered it the way that you did. Before we let you go, man, and you've been great, and we appreciate
you're
that.
You're awesome, Teddy.
I got to ask you about this Jack Adams trophy that's broken.
He threw it down.
I want the real story. Like, yeah. Set the scene. What did you do to the trophy? How'd you break it?
I think I got it a couple months after, 2 or 3 months after all this stuff happened with not signing up with renegotiating my contract. And all of a sudden, one day, the package came with the and it said, I forget exactly who it came from, whether it came from Buffalo or from the National Hockey League. And I kind of shook a little bit. I knew what it was. It was a replica trophy of the Jack Adams. So I grabbed that thing and I gave it the best kick I could inside the house. And I kicked it downstairs. And I kind of heard it kind of rumble a little bit. And I heard kind of glass breaking a little bit. And I grabbed that box and I threw it in underneath the stairwell of my house. And it was there for, I bet you, 4 years, 5 years. I never opened it. I just left it there. And then I didn't want to go through the rest of my life being there. I really didn't. I wanted to try to make things better. Mm-hmm. So I kind of did, you know, some soul searching. I did some reaching out and I learned to, you know, forgive a little bit. And so I finally opened up the box and it wasn't, and the way you saw it on TV, that's the way it was. The guy on top fell off, the 2 pucks came off, the things underneath kind of cracked a little bit. So, but it's still, I'm not to the point where I can put it on my mantelpiece and say, I'm very proud of that, which I'm not. So it's, and I never coached hockey to win awards. I coach hockey, try to win championships for sure. And try to make people better. That's the reason I coach. Cause when I played, I just really didn't feel I got a fair shake on how to bend my knees properly, how to get my head up, how to move the puck, how to jump in the holes, how to react, how to spin from forward to backwards, how to do all those simple things that people take for granted, that coaches should teach. And when I became a coach, that's one thing I really wanted to do. And I was thinking about all the crazy things we did in practice. I mean, I used to color code my players. We had 5, 6 different colors in rows, and they all had this path to a certain guy to learn to keep their head up a little bit more. We practice in the dark. We practice with music. We practice with 5 players as one unit. I don't care what position you play, just go up with 5 guys. We use the power play. That kid's book, Find Waldo. I said, that's our power play. We got to find the open man.
Great
I don't care
book,
where he
by
is.
The way.
Yeah, so all those type of things, and we had a blast. But the bottom line, we worked, and we competed, and we built a family bond that we took care of one another, and that's how you win.
You know what? Real quick, look, be proud of that damn trophy, mm-hmm. and if you're not, then give it to Andy because he doesn't have any trophies because he never won anything in his life. But you know, you take that trophy and put it up now, Teddy. Though I think, like, look what you've done, man. You got a corporation going on, like,
and you earned
feel
it too,
proud,
you
Teddy.
Earned it too. Hey, you did, and you earned. So it.
Was, Well, we got Jordan's three cups hanging around pretty good, so we're pretty
those
proud
don't count.
No, I want one of those. Can give me one of those. Don't worry about it, Jack Adams. Hey, I'll take one of those bad boys.
But I heard you say that, you know, if you were white, you think you would still be coaching. And I got to be honest, with me as a kid watching the Buffalo Sabres, my family's from Buffalo. I was living in St. Louis, but still watching the Sabres from afar. Like, I never even knew. I just thought you were tan. I had no idea you were First Nation. I didn't know what was going on. You had great hair, everything.
Great.
And I'll tell you this, because Craig Berube, he brought the first Stanley Cup here to St. Louis. Yeah. He's got Native American First Nation heritage. It's never, ever brought up. I mean, no one even, like, looks at him like that. And people celebrated his history. He took the Stanley Cup back to his roots to his hometown over there in Western Canada. So, do you truly believe that? And would you welcome another opportunity? Are you still hoping that maybe you'll get one?
You know what? I still believe it. I believe it very strongly because you know how this game works, and so it's all based on relationships. And then if you know someone, and coaches are getting jobs and rehired after rehired, they never even won anything. And you look at that and you go, well, why would they get an opportunity and you don't? But it's the same. But if you're not in that circle, and the one thing I never did was in the summertime, I never went to coaching clinics. I never went to golf outings. I went back home. I went back home to our community, and I went to the powwow trails, and I hung with my family, and I couldn't wait for the season to end to go back home. And so when you're not part of that group, and you're not going back to Toronto, you're not going back to St. Louis, you're not going back to a big city, you're out of sight. When you're out of sight, you're out of mind. And so I love my home, and I love my family more than I love the sport of hockey. So, but hockey is what I did. Answer your question, would I coach again? I think I could. I know I'm a good coach, and I know how to win. And I love another opportunity to prove that I can. And the last time in Buffalo, it made me physically sick of what we have to go through. We have to endure. I mean, when you're trying to lose, I mean, that's degrading to the game, degrading to the players. And in first-round picks, they should take that last picks first out of the game. They should just throw every ball in the thing. So, because every team has scouts now. If you're bad, you're just bad. You don't blame it on something else. You're bad because you deserve to be bad. And it just puts everyone in, with everybody's ball in that thing at the end, and whoever comes out first gets the first pick.
Yeah. Well, they wanted McDavid. They couldn't even get that right over there in Buffalo. Although Jack Eichel's not a bad consolation prize, although it's just not working for him this year for whatever's going on. I don't know. Nothing's working.
Oh, he's a good player for sure.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Would you welcome being an assistant, or are you only would you only consider a head coaching position?
No, it's funny. I haven't really got an agent. I never really did have an agent. People calling on your behalf and what have you. And all the jobs I kind of got is I got the job in Hartford for the first time because Jimmy Rutherford, we beat his team in junior hockey, and he kind of knew who I was. And that's how that worked out. And I don't know how Buffalo came about. Someone over there found out. So I don't have anybody really selling me, but my phone number is still in the book in Sault Ste. Marie. So if anybody ever is looking for a coach, track down my name. It's in the phone book in Sault Ste. Marie, and I'll be available anytime.
Okay, I got to be honest. You weren't that easy to find. I had to go extra length to try to find you, Teddy, just so you know. But I'm so glad we were able to track you down. And can I ask you to expand on that, though? Did Buffalo tell you to lose? Like, were they telling you, like, instructing you to lose? Like, we need to lose. Like, was that the order?
Well, you know, in a roundabout way, when a goaltender plays a pretty good couple of games and all of a sudden he's gone, and you're going into a lineup and you're two guys short, I'm going, it's tough enough. When you're benching one of the top players at the closing of a game and you win, and GM comes in and blasts you and says, what do you think, you're going to make the playoffs? I'm going, shouldn't we be happy we won a game? So those type of things were kind of around all the time. And it just kind of literally made you ill. And you knew what they wanted. They wanted to finish last. And then you hear the comment, oh, when the Detroit got Stevie Eiserman, you have to be bad. You have to be real, real bad. And so those type of comments you hear all the time, and just literally makes you sick. And I didn't sign up for any sport to act like that, or to pretend you're winning, trying to win, but you're really not.
Did you leave? What last thing for you? What kind of taste in your mouth did you leave?
Andy, come on now.
With the Islanders, when you went to the Islanders, how did that situation end for you?
The Islanders, we made the playoffs. First time we made the playoffs in 6 years when I was there, and then when Garth Snow took over, and obviously he wanted his own guy, which is fine. So that was fine with me. When somebody wants somebody, I'd rather get that type of response, and and then try to make it so bad that you leave, or you don't want to come back. I mean, just tell the person that you don't want them, and we're going to find somebody else. So I was fine with the way the Islanders worked out. I wish I would have stayed a little bit longer, but I like to. You know, there's one organization or two that I was part of, the Moncton Wildcats, and Robert Irving. He wants to win all the time. And I love that. Yeah. You don't want to win. You don't want to say, well, let's build for 2 years down the road. Who cares about 2 years down the road? Let's win now. And then when I went to Latvia, they want to win so bad right now. And there's one game we lost against the, I think the Czech Republic one game. And the president of the team came in between periods and fired me. And thank God I didn't speak Latvian, because I didn't understand. And the GM kind of talked to him afterwards, and he saved my job because I love the passion about wanting to win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
no doubt about it. Teddy, man, listen.
Teddy, you're the man.
And we're going to get you that job, by the way.
Yeah, that's how it works when you come on this pod.
But people may need to know. They may have to reach out to us to get your phone number. You said it's available in the suit. I'll tell you, man, I had to work extra hard to find your number. So.
Yeah, Andy knows everything.
Or just go on 3nolans.com, where you get all three of us, Brandon, myself, and we opened up a little clothing line on our line.
I know, there's sick hats. Can I get a hat, please?
Yeah. I'm talking to the kid, the buddies.
I'm going
to
trade you a hat. I'm going to send you one of our hats. Yeah. You send me one of your hats. Is that a deal?
There you go. We're just, actually, you got my email now, and send me that. Brandon does all of our... all of our swag, and I'll get the information off to him for sure.
Yeah, tell the boys, sweet. Hey, tell the boys I said hey, okay? Absolutely. And I'm sorry for everything I've done. I don't know what I did, but who knows? I'm going to say sorry.
Teddy, listen. Hey, be proud of your career, man. We appreciate you coming on with us. Honestly,
you're the man.
People will love this.
Oh, thank you guys very much for having me on, and continue the great work.
Thank you, dude. See you, buddy.
Take care.
All right, that was Teddy Nolan here on the Cam and Strick podcast, man. What a cool dude. And you know,
man,
what?
Really cool.
Cam, I saw that TSN special, and he's a guy who, again, like I said, I got a buddy here who played for him, who's always raved about him, and he's always been on the list of guys we had to get on, right? I always wanted to know him, but then, like, you don't really know the story, and then you dive into it, and you're like, what? This guy won the Jack Adams Award, and he didn't get a head coaching job for, like, 10 years later in the NHL?
Yeah, he did get pushed aside, man, like, no doubt. But on the other hand, he did get a job offer that he could have took in Tampa Bay, so it's like, well, what was it? I think he had two job offers, actually. But in a way, like, if you do dive into everything, like, he kind of got pushed aside, and he thinks it's because of his skin color. Like,
well,
he
says that he probably would be coaching still. So I mean, so you're not wrong by saying that. Okay. But he also knows that there's a reputation out there that, for whatever reason, he's got this reputation like that he's some type of like GM killer or something. But you know what? I don't trust anything that goes down in Buffalo. Let me just tell you that. Okay. Buffalo is so messed up. They still haven't figured it out years
later. Oh, man, dude.
Could you imagine being a coach, though, when your job is to win? And you've got the general manager coming down on you and be like, what are you doing? You're trying to make the playoffs? It's like, you know, dude, I'm trying to win. But you also want Connor McDavid at the same time. They didn't even get Connor McDavid. Remember, everyone thought that they were going to get McDavid. And
oh, God.
Not a bad consolation prize to have Jack Eichel. Jack Eichel's a great player. I'm not so sure, you know. I love Jack. Don't get me wrong, but he needs a lot of help there.
We need to get him on the pod is what we need to do. But I'm glad we got a guy like Teddy Nolan on, dude. We switch it up. We'll get the players. We'll get the heavies. We'll get the owners. We'll get the GMs. But it's nice to get a coach that has a story, whatever kind of story it is, good, bad, or ugly. We want to be different. So we want to get different guys on that have different stories. And this one was definitely unique. but he's doing great now. But we just wanted to hear about it, man. Like, you read all this shit about Teddy Nolan. It's good to talk to him for an hour and a half. He answered every question. He didn't, you know, we kept him on a little bit longer, and he kind of let it out like a therapy session, Andy. That's what we do, baby. Yeah,
no doubt. And talked to him a little bit afterwards too, man. He loved the conversation, man. So
yeah,
and that's what it's all about. Like, you know how it is. We bring these guys on, and you instantly automatically have like this relationship in the
connection with these guys. Dude.
And so we'll continue to follow that up with Teddy Nolan. I hope he gets a chance. But I don't think he is a GM killer, man. His players love him. You know, they were spreading some nasty rumors about this guy too.
Oh,
like, who's doing that? Is that coming from the organization? Like, who's responsible for that? You know, we don't know.
Who, the one that he said that he was supposed to be banging Hasek's wife or something? Wouldn't
I don't know if Hasek's name ever was brought up, but the players told me who I talked to. Yeah, you can say that, man, that it was Hasek's wife. That he goes, the rumor was that he was sleeping with players' wives.
Yeah.
But I don't know if the player's name ever was put out there. We put it out there, but apparently it was Hasek.
Imagine you get cucked by a coach, your coach. That's like the ultimate worst thing in the world. You know what I mean? Like, that's the biggest. And I don't believe Teddy did anything, to be honest with you. Like, you don't know, but I don't believe it.
The players all said this is complete
no way.
BS.
Yeah.
What about
and I believe them.
What about what some of these guys, we got to get Hasek on here, man. I mean, he now has become like in our rankings of most interesting people in the world right now. He certainly has like climbed up there. I got to talk to this guy. Why were you so great? And like your teammates.
Whoa. Like, Barnaby
didn't love you, man. Like, what's up?
How many guys we had on that fucking hated him? Like Barney fucking couldn't stand him. And I think they're kind of buddies now, but like as they couldn't stand each other.
He went after that reporter, ripped his shirt off. Okay. Like physically attacked Jim Kelly. And
he'd be fucking jail.
Longtime hockey writer. And they suspended him only for 3 games. He would like, he probably missed like 20 games plus if that were to happen today. Who knows? And they may just kick you out of the league.
Dude, you beat up a reporter. You're done, dude. Get out
I
of
know.
Here.
I know. So he goes after the referee. Babcock style. I've been there.
Yeah, you can't do that shit.
I've never had a player try to physically attack me though. But
except for me, Chaser, and fucking Bobby.
Hey, that's a hat trick right there.
It's a hat trick right there.
I'm the only one on the face of the earth that can say that I've been hit by all three of you.
Yeah.
Nobody else can say that.
Yeah, we're gonna get you a plaque, I think.
But how about speaking of plaques? And I don't know, we'll talk to Hasek. But I needed to know because, you know, like they've got that TSN special and the guy's like, oh, Teddy, how'd you break the trophy? And he's like, oh, I just tripped down the stairs or threw it down.
No, he said he chucked it down the stairs.
No, but I'm like, okay, what, in the feature?
Yeah, he said he threw it down the stairs.
He's like, oh, I just threw it down the stairs. But like he said it like very nonchalantly.
Yeah.
In the interview, though, I'm like, all right. Like, I want to know what really happened to this trophy. Okay, what'd you do? Like, can he kick that thing, man? Yeah. I mean, could you imagine getting an award like that? It's such an accomplishment at the highest level, and you don't appreciate it. You don't even want it because you're so angry at the game, you know?
I told him to give it to you. Then you'll have one trophy in your fucking trophy fucking collection. A broken one, though.
And so it was great to have him on. So we appreciate Teddy Nolan for joining us here on the Camister podcast. And I hope he gets another opportunity. It's not too late. He still wants to coach, man.
Yeah, man. Maybe he can coach the alumni. Coach
did you. Did you like the X's and O's guys or the people coaches, like the player coach? Like where's the...
I'll tell you. I like both.
What blend do you need?
Well, I didn't... Andy Murray maybe would have been too technical for my style. Although, who gives a shit about my fucking style? I'm a 3-minute piece of shit. So, but... If you're asking me, I'm going to tell you. Did I like to go
on a good night? You're playing 3 minutes.
On a good night, I'm playing. Thank you. But I'll give you an example. Andy Murray, who's a good guy. He's a good guy. We had our differences, but he's a good guy. But every minute, Andy, you know what I'm talking about. Andy Murray in practice, which you just want flow. I want to skate around and not stop and just go, not go to the board. He'd have us go to the board every 2 seconds and kind of do this and do that. We're like, okay, I'm sweating 40 minutes into the fucking practice. That kind of shit, I don't like. I like when coaches go out there, let's go fast. Yeah, and if you need to be technical. But on the broader scheme of things, I like both kind of coaches because those technical coaches, man, you just learn a lot, dude. Like, you know, it's confusing sometimes. It's annoying sometimes, but fuck, you just learn a lot of shit from those kind of coaches. And then the other coaches, you kind of learn to be different a little bit, more loosey-goosey, more just it's completely different. And you could get, you know, you could find ways to, like, you know, build your fucking hockey presence by both kind of coaches.
Yeah.
It's a terrible wording there. That's terrible wording.
Terrible answer.
I couldn't find a way to wrap up that fucking question. God damn.
All right, CarShield, man, brought us that interview. Again, CarShield.com. We had a serious emergency yesterday at the office where the power goes out. Cam was scared. We had to light candles. Old people.
I wanted to get the fuck out of there. I'm not
old people.
And hanging
old
out
people
with you.
Are walking in the hallways. Like they think we're crazy as it is. We're like cruising. It's pitch black in this building. We're like
scared
cruising
of us.
Through the hallways, and like these old people are like, "What is going on?
Who are you? Are you guys the ones screaming over there?
Are you the electricians?
Jesus, help us here.
Can you turn it back on?
Turn the lights on.
So here now we had to do our intro and outro and everything. The next day, I'm at my house. Cam's at the crib. So. Anyway, we're doing our thing. 800-857-2481. CarShield always doing their thing. Mention the promo code CAM, you're going to save 10%. So again, they're hooking it up. Do it though, man. I really mean this to our listeners. Doesn't matter where you are right now, get that CarShield, because you don't know when something's going to go down in your car. You don't want to get stuck with this bill that we're talking thousands and thousands of dollars. This way, you can sleep at night because you have that protection.
Exactly.
You need to get it. Yeah, you need to get it with CarShield. There's no question about that. All right, Dan Bellman, our boy, Bellman.com. Get that new ride in time for the upcoming summer. You got to drive in style, Cam. That's just the bottom line. Bellman.com, Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Chrysler,
Buick.
Dodge, Jeep, Ram, all up there in Troy, Missouri. So be sure to check.
I want that fucking fat ass fucking Dodge Dually, baby, just like on Yellowstone. Shit kicker.
They have dualies on Yellowstone?
Yeah, because they're badasses. You don't even know what it is.
They don't have those, dude. They don't even.
Yes,
I don't think they sell those. I don't think they sell those. And they're not badass either. Okay. I mean, only you thinks that. Okay? First off, can I tell you something? I go to the gas station the other day, and this guy who's got a boat on his hitch, let me tell you something. If you're driving a boat, stay the hell out of the gas station. You take up the whole space. There's no way to get in. I can't pump my gas because you've got this boat taking up all the space. How do you do this with a boat, man? You got to fill up gas before you put the boat on your truck, okay? That's just the bottom line.
How the fuck are you going to do that? You're going to go to the gas station with 15 fucking gallons, 20, 40 gallons of gas, and then fill them all up, tie it all together, put it in the back of your truck, then go to your driveway.
There's
and then
no
dump
room
the fucking
for you.
Gas, then dump the gas. No. I go and I pull my fucking truck right up. I'll wait if it's packed, and I'll make my way up, and I go to the end one. So just my boat is there. There's ways to do it. Did the guy use two lanes up? If he used then he's a fucking prick. Then he's an idiot. You get my drift? If he's using two lanes up, then he's a dick. Yeah.
I went to the rich part of Ladue to get gas the other day.
Good for you.
And they let you in? And this guy, he must have been from your area, whatever. I mean, he's using our gas pumps, whatever, with this boat, you know.
With his dirty Hoosier hands.
Taking up all the space, man. That is
get out of here, fancy
but
lad.
He's still keeping it handsome. That's what we do, man. Keep it handsome.com. Yeah. Use that promo code Cam and Strick. You're going to save 15%. Again, get the shampoos and the conditioners. The Fight Ugly hoodies are great, man. And you need to get one. And I want to see you post a picture. Somebody posted a picture the other day with them wearing their Fight Ugly hoodie with their
cane
rake, man. So I love seeing that. Baby. And get that Fight Ugly hoodie and get the matching collection with the hat, man. The Cam and Strick hat with the Fight Ugly emblem on there. How cool is that? So get the all the hair products too. Again, keepithandsome.com. All right. When I drive black tie. I don't know about you, man, but I'm hooking it
up. I'm driving that Beamer tonight to the game
right now. Oh, yeah.
I will be. I'm getting that X6. I'm taking that bad. Kate and I are going to take that bad boy to the game tonight. You know,
are you?
Yeah. Yeah. We'll drive that bad boy today. So we're.
VIP parking, man. You just pull right up. You got to pull up in style. There's no doubt. So,
hell yeah.
Call Ellie, call Dylan, man. They'll hook you up and get you set up, man. This is the best way to do it. If you're looking to drive an exotic car, you think, hey, man, there's no way I can get into one, but you want to drive a G-Wagon or a Range or whatever, have a kick-ass car for the weekend, this is the way to do it. When I drive black tie. Again, go to the Cam and Strick website, check out all the hats. Everything is there for you. And
Help support sponsors, guys. Keeps this thing going. You want us to keep going.
If you missed an episode, dude, it's all right there, camastrip.com. All the previous episodes, you just hit play. You don't have to search through anything, man. They're all there for you. I still hear from people, Cam, who maybe just heard about us in the course of the last couple months, whatever, and they're just now listening to some of the shows from like several months ago, even from a year ago, dude. So it's never too late to get caught up over there at camastrip.com. All right, Dan Bellman, our boy. Check it out, bellman.com. They got all the cars. I said the Cadillac, the Buick, the GMC, Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram. Best customer service anywhere, Cam. What are you going to get from the customer service there?
Well, you ain't going to get no swinging dicks. Swinging her dicks around, fucking creeping your broad out. Not happening at Bellman. No, 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 no.
It won't happen.
Swinging dick.
It's definitely not happening.
No.
We mentioned Daredevil Hockey. Again, parents out there, man, take the safety serious. Make sure your kid is protected. Skate lacerations are scary and they are serious. Ultimate Hockey fans, use that promo code Cam and Strick. You'll get free shipping. Again, with Daredevil Hockey, you can mention Cam and Strick as well. You'll save 25%. I should point that out. That's a pretty kick-ass deal.
Damn right.
Cam and Strick, all caps, 25%. Same thing with the Ultimate Hockey fans. So be sure to get all that taken care of. So anyway, man, any final thoughts on Teddy Nolan that you want to leave our listeners with, Cam?
Just listen to it and listen to this guy and he's sincere in everything he says. You could always tell Andy who really the nice guys are. And you talk to a guy for an hour and he's kind of like, talking about uncomfortable stuff. You kind of get to know the guy a little bit. And he just seems like a down to earth, cool cat that I would like him to coach me. Like I would like a coach like that. I feel like I can go in his room, like, man, what do I need to do? And he doesn't just play a fucking mind game. He's like, no, I need you to get the puck out better. And that's really it, Cam. You're hitting guys doing this. I just need you to get the puck out in the zone more consistently. I'm like, okay, I can figure that. I'm going to do 50 fucking wall rims after practice. And now you're in your groove. It's just like, I feel like if I talked to him, he would tell you what you need to know.
And I look at all these players that he coached in junior, like Bob Bugner, man, you're on the bench in San Jose. Like, bring this guy on your staff. Like, there's people who know him, who have a connection with him. This guy played with Wayne Gretzky back in the day in junior. How cool would that be, by the way, to say you played junior with Wayne Gretzky?
I know, that may even be cooler than
like playing with him, like for like
scoring the 10 Rangers goals a game.
I know.
Scoring like 10, and, like, 10 a game.
And they're doing shootouts. They're doing shootouts with him, like during the intermissions. Like, what?
I know. That was like, kind of weird. I'd be like, I'm not doing that. Going against a junior player. He's going against like a kid. And like for Gretter, he's going to score a time. But if I had to do that, I'd be like, oh, fuck. Like this kid's going to score and I'm going to toe pick.
But I bet you a coach nowadays, could you imagine the coaches be like, hell no. He's got to watch video on the iPad during the intermission.
Well, even if you didn't have an iPad, no, you need to rest during intermission and fucking get hydrated, dude. Like, I just played 20 minutes in a 20-minute period. Can he rest, please?
I know. But he coached Adam Foote. He coached Steve Sullivan, man. He coached a bunch of guys.
Oh, God, Stevie Sullivan. Jeez Louise.
Yeah, I know.
Fucking, that guy's been around. He's a great dude.
I hear.
Great dude. Fucking fun. Silly.
Yeah.
Sully. 50 different teams.
He was with Arizona recently, man. He's kind of part of that whole.
Yeah, no, he's just he's got his kids down there. His kids play. He's all over. He partied with us in Nashville. Came down to Nashville and partied with us. So, dude.
And Pat LaFontaine, all these guys who know him, even from his NHL.
Another great guy.
Somebody's gonna give this guy an opportunity. I hope, man. I hope people see this story, they hear this story, and somebody gets to know him and then decide for yourself, man, if he would fit with your organization.
So, I'd hire him.
We appreciate Teddy Nolan for being honest with us in a time when it's been very emotional, man, here around our parts and dealing with everything that's been going on here with the passing of Bobby and everything. So, to kind of have that escape and talk to Teddy and hear his story. I know Bobby, he would appreciate a story like this as well, man.
Look
at people who come from different backgrounds and, Bobby being from Kirkland Lake, Ontario, some of the stories from back when he was younger, man, just absolutely hilarious. So we appreciate Teddy Nolan for joining us.
It's going to be a sad night. It's going to be a sad night tonight, Andy, going to the game and honoring him. So it's going to be heartfelt. I'm excited to see all the guys and kind of just shoot the shit with all of them. Fucking tell some Bobby stories, man. So I'm excited about that, but it's going to be teary eyed. Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So it's all good. So,
anyway. All right. Episode number 126. Big shout out to everybody out there, man. Thanks for supporting us as always on the Cam and Strip Podcast.